or the content advisor. I just have a quick question.
Shaky mum.
Well, it seems like you're not at the party, sir. You're not invited, eh?
But only for that party, Imam Shaky.
Yes, thank you, sir. How are you doing, Dr. Jacob?
I'm good, yourself?
Well, glad. Just very disappointed and shocked at the passing of our comrade, Honorable Mapatsu. Bad news indeed, very bad, very sad.
Yes, it's very, very bad news. We were in plenary when that news came.
Yeah, sad.
All right, we are almost about to start. I think we are about to start. Honorable members, good morning.
Morning, sir. Morning, sir.
We are... Good morning, everyone. Thank you. Honorable members, this is our second meeting after the election of our new chairperson. And I appreciate all your support of yesterday. Today we have two items on our agenda, and we will go right into our meeting. Our agenda will be flighted as I do the opening and welcoming. If it can be flighted by our co-host, our host today, Ms. Ngumane. Just before we go into the meeting, I have to state that we have an acting secretary this morning, which is Ms. Bali, Ms. Cindy Bali, who has been at Parliament for 14 years. She's also a secretary of a portfolio committee, and it is in the absence of our second secretary, Ms. Majalamba, who is not well, and we wish her a speedy recovery. We therefore will look at attendance confirmations of members, and I will be calling the names since our acting secretary is not so familiar with all of us. She and I had a discussion that she would then note when he's present. And before we do that, just to hear if we have any apologies. Ms. Ngumane or anybody else, have you received any apologies?
Good morning, Chair. We don't have any apologies.
All right, so members, if you just bear with me, I'm going to call names or to make certain instead of having to look at the platform for every name. So present here is Ms. Bali. Can you just maybe show yourself to us?
Yes, Jefferson. I'm here. Hello. Good morning, Mr. Guest.
Good morning. Thank you very much. So if you will just note who is present when I call the names, and we'll do it that way this morning. Myself, of course, I'm here. I've seen, I'm going to go down the list. I've seen Honorable Sheikh Imam. I see Honorable Gayla. I see Honorable Wilson. I see Honorable Ismail, Honorable Van Staden, Honorable Sukas, Honorable J. Siliti, Munyai, Honorable Sukacha, Honorable Harvard. All right. Who have I missed, Honorable Members? You may just shout here if I have missed your name. Honorable Wilson, I think I mentioned you. Yes, have I missed anyone? I'm going to quickly go again. So I'm right at the top there. Then it's Honorable Sheikh Imam, Honorable Gela, Honorable Wilson, Honorable Ismail, Honorable Van Staden, Honorable Sukas, Honorable Munyai, Honorable Sukacha, Honorable, yes, those are, and Honorable Hubbard. Thank you very much. So these are the members who are deemed to be present in the meeting. Now, if we can then just...
Sorry, Dr. Jacobs.
Yes, Honorable Sheikh Imam.
Chair, once again, allow me to apologize. I'm going to be attending Chief Whoops at 10 o'clock, but I'm also attending appropriations at the moment. So my apologies, the Chair. Thank you.
Certainly, Honorable Sheikh Imam. Now, before we continue, Honorable Members, and before we even look at the agenda, I just need to remind us of a few things. And that is that you're all very welcome to this meeting. We also welcome SAFRA and their delegation to the meeting, whom I will give an opportunity later to introduce themselves. And we also welcome any members of the media and all other people present at our meeting. This is a virtual meeting of this committee. And before we proceed, I would like to remind you that this virtual meeting is deemed to be in the precinct of Parliament and therefore constitutes the meeting of a committee of the National Assembly for official purposes only. In addition to the rules of virtual sittings, the rules of the National Assembly, including the rules of debate, apply. Members enjoy the same powers and privileges that apply in a sitting of the National Assembly. Members should equally note that anything said in the virtual platform is deemed to have been said to the House and may be ruled upon. All members who have logged in shall be considered to be present and are requested to mute their microphones and only unmute when recognized to speak. This is because the microphones are very sensitive and will pick up noise which might disturb the attention of other members. When recognized to speak, please unmute your microphone and connect your video. Members may also make use of the icons on the bar at the bottom of the screens, which has an option that allows the member to put up his or her hand to raise points of order. The secretariat will assist in alerting the chairperson to members requesting to speak. When using the virtual system, members are urged to refrain or desist from unnecessary points of order or interjections. We shall now proceed with the business of the day. And if we can please, we have our agenda flighted. So we need to do attendance confirmation by SAFRA. So we only have two items for consideration today, which is a presentation by SAFRA on the COVID-19 vaccine licensing, vaccine efficacy rates, and latest vaccine research internationally and in South Africa. And we will then have consideration and adoption of KwaZulu-Natal Oversight Report, consideration and adoption of Gauteng Oversight Report. Now, members, you have received the presentations and also the oversight reports. I will therefore go straight to SAFRA. Professor, if the professor can please indicate, and the CEO, I'm looking whether they are both. I've seen the CEO on the system. If you can please indicate who have who are attending the meeting with you, and introduce your members.
I just want to check if I see Prof. Reese's name is here. Just to
yes, I'm here. Yes, I'm here. Thank you. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you very, very much for the invitation. We have a team here with us who are going to be presenting. In fact, Dr. Smeti will present to you on the questions that you've asked. From the board side, Shibir Banu is with us. He is the chair of the committee that looks at technical matters and regulatory science. And then we have with us from the side of Dr. Smeti, she will introduce her colleagues, but we have Portia Nkambule, who is also with us, Toslang Setloho, he's with us as well. And I don't see other colleagues, but I'm very happy to hand straight over with your permission to Dr. Smeti, because I realize that time is always tight on these occasions and people would like to have a discussion. I think there's, I'll ask Dr. Smeti if there are other colleagues that I have missed who are with us. Thank you.
Good morning, honourable members and to the SAPRA board members. In this meeting, we have our full SAPRA executive, being our executive for HR, Mr. Gordon Tagati, our CFO, Mr. Richard Holtz, our COO, Chief Operations Officer, Ms. Kristalna Reinecker. We have our CRO, Ms. Portia Nkambule. We have our board secretary, Mr. Peter Ntotso, as well as the senior managers, as indicated, Tashan, Silverani, and Dimakasi. I'll immediately go to the presentation chair. I'm going to share my slide. Again, thank you very much for the opportunity for us to give you an update on the COVID-19 vaccines. And we have indeed kind of stuck to the brief that we were provided in terms of what we should share on. We will talk around the authorization process. I think it is quite important that we continuously do so because we do get questions around this. We will speak to the vaccine updates as well as the safety updates. Just briefly, in terms of the vaccine authorization process that we follow, it is quite a detailed process that at a time includes, you know, involves a team of between 10 and 15 experts looking at different aspects of the application. Firstly, we look at the applicant. It's important that every applicant is a locally registered entity that is licensed by SAPRA. And it is important that it's a locally registered entity because they would be accountable for the vaccine safety monitoring as well as vigilance. So whoever that applies must have a local company that is licensed by SAPRA. The second aspect that we assess is what we call place, and I'll just go into a bit of detail around that. Regarding that, we look at the facility or the manufacturing site wherein these vaccines...
Jefferson, am I the only one who can't hear? It's quiet here. I can't hear. Am I the only one? I'm sorry.
I can hear very well. Can the other members please indicate?
I can hear Dr. Smeti very well.
I can hear Jefferson.
I can also hear very well, Chair.
So, Honorable Sukacha, seems like there's something wrong on your side. Maybe look at your volume.
It's quiet. I don't know. I don't see anyone.
I think if you look at your volume buttons or whether you've maybe muted your device on the hearing part. And then secondly, if not, maybe to restart, come back into the meeting and see if it improves. But we will continue, Honorable Sukacha. Please continue, Dr. Smeti.
Thank you very much. So as I was indicating, we look at the facilities where the vaccines in this case are manufactured, and we look at what we call good manufacturing practices. In this case, we look at the processes and the standard operating procedures that are followed in terms of manufacturing of the drug substance. So this is the active of the actual vaccine. And then also look at the drug product. So this is then the manufacturing of the final and finished product. And so we go into a lot of detail around assessing these signs. In the event, which is in most cases, that the vaccines are manufactured out of South Africa, we work very closely with the regulators in those countries, but also we work closely with the WHO, wherein we've also been part of some of the inspections that the WHO has conducted, wherein our experts have gone into those sites. So this is one area which is quite critical because it speaks to the quality elements of the product. And so if the applicant does not have a GMP compliance site, or if there are any queries that are outstanding, it will not proceed to a full evaluation, as this is the first critical step. And in a number of the applicants, this has been one area wherein we've had a number of queries. Quite important also is to mention that in the case, for example, of J&J that is conducting, that is doing the fill and finish for the, where Aspen is doing the fill and finish for the J&J vaccine, wherein the drug substance is brought into the country, then Aspen does the fill and finish. We've had to inspect that facility. We worked with them very early on in the process, wherein they modified their facility and they got the GMP clearance from SAPRON. And therefore then other regulators, wherein Aspen is exporting the product, would then rely on the work that South Africa has done, and in this case that SAPRON has done. The second part that we look at from a quality perspective is what we call chemistry, manufacturing, and control. Now, this is where we look at how the actual product is manufactured. We look at how it's characterized. Are they using mechanisms that have got very clear validation protocols in place? Are they testing the product that comes out of the manufacturing product? We look at any impurities or any limits of detection that are being applied for those impurities. So again, a very detailed process around the determining the quality of the product. When we're then done with those steps, we look then at the next part. And again, with every part, we have experts in each of these 8 steps that I speak to that are looking into this work. And so it's quite a detailed assessment that we conduct. The fourth step is what we call non-clinical data assessment. So this is where we look at data that is generated from what we call preclinical studies, wherein they've looked at the safety, early safety data, wherein they've looked at the toxicity and some lab-based pharmacokinetics type of work. And so we look at that in a lot of detail. When we are then satisfied with that data, we will then go to the next step, which is where we look at the safety, efficacy, and the quality. Again, in this step, we focus a lot on the clinical outcome. So with the clinical outcome, we look from phase 1 all the way to phase 3 data provided. Just to spend some time on this, when it comes to a phase 1 study, just at a very high level, so this is when, after they've done the lab-based and the preclinical study, their applicant would then assess this product from a safety perspective in a phase 1 clinical study. And this is in, relatively smaller numbers in the region of about 100 or so, to look at the safety of the product. They then move to a phase 2 study, which is a much larger number of individuals participating in that clinical trial, wherein they start again looking at very similar to preclinical, but they now look at matters of pharmacokinetics, et cetera, in this cohort of clinical trial participants. And the next phase would then be the phase 3 study. And this is the phase that includes, tens and thousands of individuals that participate in this phase 3 clinical trial. And here, safety is continuously assessed, but largely from a phase 3 study, they start to look at efficacy. Just to also elaborate that in the case of all the COVID vaccines, with the exception of Pfizer that now has a market authorization from the one authority being the US FDA, all of the vaccines have got emergency use listing. Even with the WHO, it's emergency use. And as a global community of regulators, we have aligned on the minimum requirements for these vaccines, acknowledging that we are in a pandemic and we need to ensure access to the products. But we've been very clear that we will not compromise on the stringency that we apply in the evaluation. And specifically for South Africa, the very important aspect that we also consider in the review is the efficacy of the vaccine for the specific variants of concern. And this is where we usually see quite a bit of delay with the applicants, because not all of them would have data for the specific variants of concern. And it is important for us that prior to authorization of an application or of a vaccine, we make sure that we are satisfied with the data that is provided to us when it comes to efficacy against the variants of concern. Again, if you remember, you know, all of these variants, they emerge at different time points in different countries. And because we don't only review data that is generated in South Africa, we review data generated in other countries and other clinical trials, we then, it's important that they provide us with that data, but for the specific variant of concern that would be a dominant variant. So between the GMP assessment that I spoke to, which is our step two, that's where usually we have a lot of back and forth with the applicants, because not all of them, you know, we may have queries, or and some of those queries may take a while for the applicants to respond to. And again, this is then the other step wherein we need to ensure that we've got all the data. And this is where some of the delays also emerge, in that the applicants don't always have the required data. So when it comes to the question that we always get in terms of why are there varying timeframes, these are the two critical elements that result in delays, because it's important that the applicants provide us with satisfactory data that speaks to these elements. So when we're then satisfied with all the information, we then would authorize the vaccine. And there's a bit of detail in terms of conditions. As I've said, all of them are emergency use listing, definitely in South Africa, with the exception of J&J, which is a conditional market authorization. And therefore, it's important that they then comply with the conditions that we would put. So the approval process is again, quite a detail. There is a mechanism within the Medicines Act that enables the applicant who is not satisfied with the outcome of the regulator to appeal this. They can appeal this firstly to the CEO, and this is as per guidance in the Act, in the Medicines Act. And if they're still not satisfied with the outcome of their appeal with the CEO, they can then appeal with the Minister of Health, who would then put together a panel nominated by both the applicant as well as SAHPRA to deliberate on that matter. So there are mechanisms within the Act really for recourse and for engagement. Quite important also, sorry, it's a last step that I want to talk to, which is step eight. So when the vaccines then arrive in the country, we conduct what we call lot release. This is where samples are taken from the batches that have been provided, that have been made available to South Africa, and our national control lab would test the product to ensure that it still complies with quality requirements, and they look at during the transportation, did it comply with all the requirements. Now, because we're operating under, you know, in a pandemic situation, but also that some of these technologies are new, a lot of the applicants have not had the capacity to be able to do what we call technology transfer to all of the control labs. So all the control labs, and again, these are WHO accredited control labs, we've agreed that we will apply reliance. So when a product leaves a certain country and comes to South Africa, we're provided with documentation that we then assess to then determine that it is indeed the quality that's required. There are instances wherein the technology transfer has started because this is an important requirement for us, particularly going forward, wherein the applicants have started with the tech transfer and we will be able to do this. But this is not unique to South Africa. Every country in essence has, or most of the countries have control labs, and this is how we then operate. In terms of the vaccine updates, again, as I indicated, we work very closely with other regulators. We work closely also with the WHO, and we keep abreast in terms of what vaccines they're evaluating. So as of the 19th of August, this is what they have published on their website in terms of those that have WHO emergencies listing or pre-qualification. I think we've shared this an earlier version of this with yourself, but in essence, you note that the Pfizer vaccine has been authorized by the WHO, the AstraZeneca vaccine, and also vaccines that they manufacture from different sites, the Janssen vaccine, the Moderna vaccine, the Sinopharm vaccine that is manufactured from the Beijing Institute of Biological Products facility, as well as Sinovac. They are currently busy evaluating the Russian Sputnik vaccine from the Gamaleya National Center, as well as evaluating those from India, Bharat Biotech, the one from Sinopharm from a different manufacturer, Novavax, et cetera. So there's quite a number of vaccines that you will note that are in the pipeline for WHO evaluation. But also, there's more than 200 or so vaccines that are at different stages of development. And these are the ones, in essence, that, have progressed quite significantly, and regulators are now starting to look at them. In terms of our engagement, and as a SAHPRA, we've been very clear that we are willing to engage with any applicant, wherein firstly, we have what we call a pre-submission meeting. And in that meeting, we would share with them our requirements and take them through the application and all of that detail. We started with these meetings quite early on, quite late last year in November, when we, a number of the applicants had indicated an intention to submit. So in essence, all the applicants that have submitted to date, we've had pre-submission meetings with them. But also we've had pre-submission meetings with those that have not even applied at this point. So on this one slide, you will see these are the ones that have applied: Janssen, Pfizer, Lamar Pharmaceuticals have submitted Sputnik, Numalex, Curanto, they submitted Curanto, Dr. Reddy submitted Sputnik also. We also met with others, such as Vaccinity, they haven't submitted yet, Solace haven't submitted yet, Bharat Biotech that the WHO is looking at, also they are intending to make a submission. We've met also with others such as Mbabala Biotech, and really the list goes on. On this slide, we are then indicating those that we have authorized. We had authorized the AstraZeneca vaccine, the one manufactured at the Serum Institute of India in January of this year. We have authorized the Pfizer vaccine in March of this year. At the end of March, we authorized the J&J vaccine. And at the beginning of July, we authorized the Sinovac vaccine. And we're busy evaluating the Sputnik V application from Lamar Pharmaceuticals that is currently in review, as well as Sputnik V from Dr. Reddy and two Sinopharm applications. Now, one of the questions that we have had is, why has there been delays in the registration of some applications and not others? And as indicated, it's really about the quality of the submission. It's about how quickly the applicants respond to our queries. And as I've indicated earlier, the really core areas where we have a lot of back and forth with the applicants is around the GMP status of their facilities, as well as the clinical data, primarily against the variants of concern. We continuously assess, data that is emerging. We look at publications, et cetera. And we just included this one slide, which was a publication a few months ago, wherein they were indicating the vaccine efficacy of the various vaccines at the time against the Delta variant, also looked at the Beta, as well as the Alpha variant. But also just to indicate that because these, again, are conditional authorizations, what happens is that all the applicants, even though they have been authorized, they do provide us with updated data against the variants of concern. So in the case of Pfizer, they've provided us with the data against the Delta variant. We've also engaged with AstraZeneca, wherein they share their data against the Delta variant. So there's a continuous engagement between the applicant and the regulator, even though the vaccine has already been authorized. Again, because This is one of the conditions we had put there, that they must provide us with the most recent data against the variants of concern. Just one slide to speak to the clinical trials. As I've indicated, there are a number of vaccines that are in clinical evaluation. We have a number of clinical trials that we have authorized as SAHPRA. And again, we committed to expedite those processes, and you know, we continue to support the applicants and ensure that we review the applications quite timely. What you also note in the slide is that there are various types of platforms that are being utilized. You know, at the moment in the country, we've got the adenovirus vector-based vaccines. We've got the mRNA vector-based mRNA-based vaccines, and we've got we've authorized the Sinovac, which is an inactivated vaccine. But there's many other platforms, and so it's important for us as a regulator that we keep abreast of these developments and we take note of all the platforms that are being explored, such as, you know, we've got the protein subunit vaccines that are being developed. We've got the virus-like particles, et cetera. So we continuously monitor this. I just then want to briefly provide feedback on the safety monitoring. And one point that I'd like to make, maybe before I start from this part, is around the Sisonke study. And at the last meeting, we were asked that did we authorize, you know, were the vaccines that were utilized without SAHPRA authorizing those? And we indicated that that is indeed not the case. Every single vaccine, whether it's been made available through a clinical trial or through the rollout, it has to be authorized. So for example, for all the clinical trials that are ongoing in the country, SAHPRA would authorize the study itself and also issue a Section 21 authorization for the product that would be brought in for that study. And the same then happened with the Sisonke study. We authorized the study as a phase 3B study and also then authorized the doses that were brought in for that specific study. Again, from a monitoring, safety monitoring, there is a dedicated mechanism then for all the clinical trial studies to report to SAHPRA on any safety of the product. And again, Sisonke complied with that and we get reports. I am also aware that there is a Sisonke website that has been put in place, and on our microsite, which I'll refer to later, there is a link we've put to the Sisonke study to ensure that the public can also access that and look at that. So from a safety monitoring, and this again is one of our mandates as SAHPRA, to assess the safety of all health products, and in this case, of the vaccines. And so we utilize the MedSafety app. There's also an e-reporting portal on our website and our paper-based systems. We do not do this alone. We work very closely with the National Department of Health. We also work with other regulators, as there is you know, a global platform that all our data as regulators fit into that is called the Vigilance Hub. A very important committee that we work with, which was established as a non-statutory standing ministerial appointed expert committee, is the National Immunization Safety Expert Committee, NISEC. And this is a committee that is responsible for the review and assessment of all serious and severe adverse events following immunization. So that's the IUP. They also would look at any serious and unusual IUPs. And quite important is they do causality assessment. About 2 weeks ago, we had a press briefing wherein ourselves, as well as the experts from the NISEC committee, presented on how this causality assessment is conducted. Again, this is an expert committee that is very familiar with these processes. They don't only do causality assessment for COVID vaccines, they do that for all vaccines available in the country. So we work very closely then with the NISEC. We have an upcoming also webinar on the 13th of September, again, that wherein we will be sharing this data with the public and again, educating the public on how we do causality assessments. And once those are finalized, then the Department of Health would then engage with those that have reported these adverse effects. Just briefly to share the latest data as at the 13th of August. Again, there is a bit of a lag because as the team gets these reports, we have to analyze them, etc. So this is data as at the 13th of August. We had close to 2,304 individual case reports, and this means that a number of individuals that had provided us with reports of any adverse events. And you may find that one individual could have one adverse event or two adverse events. So what you will see is that the number of adverse events following immunization that we have then noted is much larger than the actual case report. Okay. And we look at this for the vaccines that have been rolled out in the country, being the Pfizer vaccine as well as the Janssen vaccine. Again, we would have much higher reports for the Pfizer vaccine because from a rollout perspective, that is the one that has the highest numbers. So we would then consider all the data that we receive from those that are reported through those mechanisms that we've indicated. And in terms of reporting, it could be the healthcare workers that report, or it could be the individuals that have been vaccinated. So the tools have been modified to cater for everyone. So in terms of those that we've reported, the NICEF committee has done causality assessment. They have so far done causality assessment on 32 deaths, and there's 14 death cases where there is follow-up on those ones. Again, we work very closely with the provincial departments of health because, they assist NICEG in gathering all the information and in a lot of the instances also in conducting the post-mortem for these individuals. And also there are cases that are under review. There are also other adverse events that have been reported that we are following up. And that's what we refer to when we say other cases. And this would refer, and I've just made some examples in terms of those that have been reported for myocarditis. We've looked at capillary leak syndrome, the Guillain-Barré syndrome, and other vascular disorders. These are just examples, but we look at every single serious adverse event that has been reported. Again, as I've indicated, and I want to highlight this, that this is an expert committee that would do the causality assessment. So to date, we have got about 30 cases of deaths that we found to be coincidental and two wherein we've got insufficient information for us to conclude on that. We've put together, and I've put in a link here, of our AIFI reporting site, this microsite. We update it regularly. If you visit it today, you will also see a lot more data around this information. We also utilize this site to educate the public. So we go into detail in terms of what is an IEC, what is an IEC, what does causality assessment mean, what type of information do we need for causality assessment, and we provide then updated information on all those cases wherein the causality assessment has been finalized. Chair, and I will wrap up here. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Any inputs from any of those accompanying you, Dr. Sumita?
My colleagues can indeed chip in. I see Prof. Rees.
Prof. Rees.
Thank you very much. Just to add one detail to emphasize, that in the act that governs SAHPRA, in the legislation, the CEO is the person who is responsible for these decisions. Like all good governance structures, there is a separation between the CEO and the secretariat and the staff versus the governance role that the board plays. So the CEO, as she's just so well described, is responsible with her team in-house, but with external experts, as she's mentioned, for making these decisions. The board does not take these decisions. It is not the role of the board. board to take these decisions. However, in the event that the board is concerned that perhaps SAPRA isn't doing its job as we should, we would then talk with the CEO and get an understanding from her and see if we can assist in solving problems. But absolutely, by legislation, there is a separation between the governance, the operation, and the decision-making, and that is very strictly adhered to. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are those the only two from your side, Dr. Semete? And I take that to be such. Thank you very much. Honourable members, we've had the presentation now. I see there are members who want to engage with the presentation. I'm going to name them. I see only six members. Let me also indicate that Honorable Chirwa has joined us and that the team Moldota is present in the meeting. Number one is Van Staden, two Ismail, three Sheikh Imam, four Sukers, five Chirwa, and six Gela. You may raise your points in that order. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Now, I have just one question, and maybe the professor can help me. I just want to know, in her view, what is the effectiveness currently of the current vaccines against the new C.1.2 variants that has now broken out in South Africa? I think it's important to just to know if she's been able to help us on that matter. Thank you, Chairperson.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everybody. And thank you for the presentation. I have a few questions. My first question, how long did it take before a Section 21 approval was given before AstraZeneca was approved? My second question, which vaccines are approved for under 18s? Is there any different concerns with regard to age group and vaccines? Will age have an impact on which vaccine is used? My third question, how much data is needed before an emergency use is given or a vaccine is approved? And my last question, the vaccines that have been approved for urgent rollout, what is the latest update on the efficacy with regards to the latest variant? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I go on?
Certainly. What about
thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you, Honorable Ismail, for that question, but I want to just change it a little bit. I'd like SAPRA to tell us exactly when did they get an application, Section 21 application for the rollout of the AstraZeneca, and when was it approved? So I think it's slightly different, but we'd like to know that. Chairperson, I want to first of all extend our condolences to the AS and the family for Honorable Mapatsu with the sad news we've had yesterday of his demise. And I'm advised that soon after having gone and taken his vaccine, Honorable Mapatsu succumbed to this. But again, you know, there's a lot of worrying things out there in terms of the number of people that are taking vaccines, but I'll get to that at a later stage. Now, the first question I want to ask SAPRA is, and I know we dealt with this yesterday, Chair, and with Honorable Munai as well. I think the question I'm asking is based on the fact that there's a whole lot of evidence on the ground to and against whether it's vaccines, whether it's ivermectin and things, and we, the public, are not convinced as to what is going on, even though I have taken both the vaccines based on the advice that I've been given, particularly from this committee and the experts. I would like SAPRA to tell us whether they will be willing to engage in a deliberation between them and other experts in the field of health and sciences. All these people are qualified people, all have been in the field of science and health for a long period of time, and they have differing views, and we'd like them to come and discuss these issues, particularly on vaccines, ivermectin, so we can get the correct message out to the people what is in the best interest in terms of their health. That's them. Now, coming to the issue of Sputnik, and I like what SAPRA just said, that, you know, in terms of applications that are made, it depends how quickly some of those making the applications respond. Well, I want to ask SEPRA on the issue of Sputnik. A few weeks ago, about 2-3 weeks ago, I was advised at that stage, 7 months into an application, not even one piece of correspondence from SEPRA acknowledging even a receipt of this application from those that have applied for the issue of Sputnik. So I'd like them to tell us this. Once again, Chairperson, I still did not get the answer that I'm asking for. Why did we prefer Johnson & Johnson to the extent when there were other vaccines that are available? And who exactly negotiated the Johnson & Johnson vaccine? And then I'd like to know the other question is this. In terms of the number of deaths and side effects, I think I imagine the judicial. I'd like indeed that these deaths that were taken after vaccines were either coincidental or not as a result of vaccines. Certainly, I don't think SEPRA and the National Department of Health are in a position in terms of what we have in the public domain to be able to give us an absolute response as to what the situation is. And I think it calls for independent investigations into this thing so that we can get a clear picture of it. Now, I want to give you some stats that 71% of those who took the vaccine were not tested positive for COVID-19 before they took the vaccine and tested positive after taking the vaccine. 27% of them had tested positive previously and 2% are unknown. So 71%, in other words, of people that have taken the vaccine, and please don't misunderstand me, I'm not an anti-vax. All I want is what is in the best interest, and that's the question I have for SEPRA and everybody else. What guarantee do you have? Because most of these things, you're still talking about on trial, yet you are convincing the people, even yourself are admitting this is a trial. Where is the convincing evidence that indeed these things work? And you can see at the moment, it's to a large extent, and I personally not going to guide me. The fact of the matter is this, that people after taking the vaccine are still testing positive. They are still dying. If you look at the case of Honorable Mapatso, perfectly well, when they took the vaccine, you're going to come back and tell me coincidental or had nothing to do with the vaccine. So I'm asking what you're going to do about an independent investigation. Now, my other problem that I'm having is, Chairperson, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're the expert again. These investigations are being done after the persons have died and buried and everything. So I don't know what processes they're following actually in terms of, establishing exactly what was the cause of death, whether it had anything to do with the vaccines or not. So that's what I want to know. Then the other question is, I think I've got a lot of questions, Chairperson, but it's a concern for me as to what is going on in the country right now. You know, the issue of AstraZeneca, in my understanding, you've approved it, and you're saying that you approve it, and you also conduct trials in the country and things like that. How is it that you approved AstraZeneca when not enough information was available to you? No trials were done before that in South Africa, even if it was on a small scale, to assure you that you might be moving in the right direction in allowing this thing to be used. But lastly, Chair, I'll stop there. I have many other questions. You must be aware, you have to be aware of all the negative publicity on vaccines all over the world, and you're also aware of all the positive information that is unfolding on ivermectin. And you appear to be ignoring all of my attitude in front of you. I'd like you to respond to that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh Imam. Honorable Sukus, let me know. Number 6 would be Honorable Gela, and number 7 would be Honorable Munyai.
Thank you, Chair, and I just want to say thank you to the presenters for the presentation. I will not repeat the questions that I was interested in that was brought up by Honourable Asina, but I want to underline that if we could get clarity on that. And then I may just also venture a bit into what Sheikh Imam has mentioned. I just want to understand the minimum requirements was applied, was mentioned by the presenter. But stringent measures has been applied. Now, I just need to understand if minimum requirements were applied, but the stringent measures that applies to approvals has been followed, if the process can just be explained to us that, you know, if you have minimum requirements, I take it that was the minimum requirements that the manufacturers had to meet, and how the stringent measures then was applied within that context, specifically because of the debacle around the AstraZeneca. So if you could just clarify for us what considerations, if any, was given in that. Then secondly, if you could provide us with examples of vaccines that did not meet the standards in SAHPRA's assessments, and who then utilized the appeals process, if any. Then thirdly, if the presenter could please expand for us on the coincidental city cases mentioned. Is it, and this is now just my question as a layperson, are we saying this person would have anyway died because of the condition that they had? And could we be given assurance that the use of vaccines when there is such a condition present, how that affects the mortality of individuals? Because we have a lot of pressure being applied on people to vaccinate. Yet in all the awareness-raising campaigns, there is very limited emphasis on people needing to seek medical attention before they get a vaccine in order for them to ascertain whether their risk, their individual risk. I would like SAHPRA please to just provide us with their view on that, and specifically where their 30 cases is concerned, if you would give the committee a clear indication when you say coincidental, exactly what does that mean. Then in terms of the adverse effects, is there enough awareness raising happening on where people need to report adverse effects? I just saw a week ago on News 24 that there was now said, this is how you can go about reporting adverse effects. But I would serve in committees where members of parliament did not even receive any counseling or knew where to go if they had adverse effects in the event of vaccination. So if you could provide us with some clarity, not clarity really, but really if enough awareness is being raised around where people can go. Then lastly, my comment is really on this. We have a number of cases within our constituencies where people are spreading and saying, this person received the vaccine and they died within a week. I serve in the central Karoo area where I can tell you we had two health professionals who received the J&J vaccine right at the beginning. They played a pivotal role in the fight against COVID. Their death last month caused a big concern for people, because both of them were vaccinated, both of them died last month. And so we really need for SAHPRA and for the health department to work together, firstly on the issue that I've raised before, where people causality or coincidental death is properly explained, especially the deaths that has been investigated by SAHPRA, so that people fully understand it. Secondly, that when people go for a COVID vaccination, that people need to be tested for COVID beforehand, because we've had even public office bearers that were vaccinated on a Monday, died 2 weeks after with COVID. Now, I don't know what the correlation, again, as a layperson, is between somebody having COVID and receiving the vaccine and how that impacts their outcome, their health outcomes. So if you could please answer on those. And I do apologize. I don't know who's, I wasn't here to hear who exactly is sitting in the presentation from SAPRA, but I'm sure there are medical doctors. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson, and SAPRA for the presentation. I have a few questions here. Firstly, I mean, there is some kind of lack of understanding on the processes that were followed in the approval of AstraZeneca that haven't been clarified properly. And this is not just an issue that suffices today, but that has been raised countless times in this portfolio committee to SAPRA. And the response that we've received in the past, sadly, I think no longer suffice enough, especially in the interest of accountability and us conducting proper and due oversight duties as the Portfolio Committee of Health. So I want to know in detail, what is it that AstraZeneca has submitted and prompted the emergency approval from SAPRA that Sputnik and Sinopharm haven't submitted to SAPRA in detail? Because I see also the review process is taking longer for other vaccinations and stuff like that. I want to know what is the essential ingredient that prompted approval for AstraZeneca, noting what then ended up being the case with AstraZeneca, that other vaccines that to date have not submitted to SAPRA in the interest of the speedy response to AstraZeneca. And secondly, I would like to know, and in detail, please, I would really hate that we go back to the same response that we gave the previous time, that no, but applications are sometimes confidential and we can't give, because now you are preventing us from doing our duty as the Portfolio Committee of Health, especially when different narratives are arising and countering the process that SAPRA is following, and if there is some kind of integrity crisis at SAPRA. So take us into confidence as the Portfolio Committee and give us those details. Would AstraZeneca submitted this that Sputnik and Sinopharm did not submit? That is why AstraZeneca was approved as soon as it was, and that is why these particular vaccines and other vaccines that I haven't mentioned have not been approved for emergency use in South Africa, that AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson were able to do. And especially also in the case of Johnson & Johnson, noting that even an extended trial was conducted in South Africa. And number two, I would like to know, like, a proper appraisal of who conducts investigations, if there's a subdivision and stuff like that of reported adverse effects, especially those that are insinuated or assumed to have led to fatalities. And I want to know, how are these investigations conducted and how is conclusive evidence gathered? And furthermore, on this particular case, I would really like the Chairperson to consider having SAPRA come back and to do a proper due presentation on these 30 cases that you mentioned as coincidental. So we know what you mean when you say coincidental. They can't all 30 be coincidental in the same manner. What do you mean is coincidental for case number one as different or opposed to case number 15? And I think this is important for various reasons that have also been mentioned in this portfolio committee in this particular time. But I think there should be a special date where SAPRA comes in and gives us a breakdown if they are also part and parcel of the investigation of adverse effects and fatalities. And if there's another body within SAPRA, they must also come before this portfolio committee and take us into confidence. And another case, Chairperson, thank you for your time, is the issue of Phindile Mncube. SAPRA came here a while back and I asked you very specifically if you had ever dealt with complications or issues surrounding surgical mesh. And SAPRA CEO was very confident in responding to the fact that they have never received a grievance in regards to the use of surgical mesh in South Africa. I was stating this because I was saying, because you are so influenced by other health regulatory bodies in globally, why are you not picking up that there's a crisis in relation to the use of surgical mesh when Australia, when New Zealand and other countries are even conducting free surgeries of removal of surgical mesh? And we've got cases in this country as well
that require the removal of surgical mesh and arising in complications, especially for women. And you as SAPRA have not done anything, have not investigated. And the CEO said they have not investigated because they have not received a grievance. Now, this was a blatant lie, as we've got email proof of communication between SAPRA and the personnel at SAPRA with Phindile Mncube regarding the use of surgical mesh and the complications that she experienced. Now, what kind of accountability will then the CEO take to say that she came to this portfolio committee and told us blatantly that they have never, not even to say we are unaware, or she said they did not receive any grievance pertaining to the use of surgical mesh, and now only to find out that that was untrue. And further on top of that, you were saying that is the reason why you have not conducted investigations as a health regulatory body on the use of surgical mesh, because you have not received a complaint. You received the complaint. You did not conduct investigations. Why is that? And on top of that, why did you lie to the portfolio committee? Do you not think that impacts the integrity and everything you have to say in this portfolio committee? If you are able to isolate some cases and give us misinformed evidence, in fact, misinformed is a very lenient word, but literally mislead an entire portfolio committee of health on an issue that you could have reserved and put on hold to then respond later. So the surgical mesh is really a big thing for me. So I would like the CEO to really take accountability for that particular response she gave, and to also update us why they did not conduct investigations like other health regulatory bodies all around the world are doing. Why is SAPRA dragging their feet on cases they know about? And we even have written evidence, email communication between SAPRA and the victim at hand. And Chairperson, also just a slight digression. I don't know if I should address it at the end of the meeting, or I can do the proposal now. In relation to the ministerial committee that was put in by the former minister on the forced sterilizations, I would like them to really come to the portfolio committee to give us an update on the processes of forced sterilizations, because there's a group of women who are unable to get health care, who are being turned back at hospitals. There's eight women, I specifically myself, took to Steve Biko and spoke with the CEO of Steve Biko, and she could not intervene in their health care, because the case is being handled by the ministers. But this is the thing I think the portfolio committee should be concerned about. There is a group of women who are forcefully sterilized, who have complications emanating from that forced sterilization, who can't access health care because this thing is under investigation. And the ministerial committee is not even ensuring that these women are able to at least access health care. Their cases are gruesome. I would hate to even divulge the information on how gruesome these cases and how complicated the complications are. So, Chairperson, please, through your leadership, please advise on how we can go about ensuring that the ministerial committee comes before the portfolio committee to give us a report on the forced sterilization crisis. Thank you very much.
Bagela.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me first welcome the presentation from SAPRA. But I will start by saying, Chairperson, I'm not a scientist. I'm a member deployed by the African National Congress to serve in this portfolio. And I think SAPRA has been doing a very good job. And they are coming to us as portfolio committee to brief us and also doing their work as expected. And I don't think that SAPRA will mislead the country. They are doing all their best as required. And they are not misleading us. So I think as politicians, we must also understand that, not to attack SAPRA. I feel very bad, Chairperson, because I know that some of the members are coming here in this portfolio committee, and also lambast SAPRA unnecessarily so. So far, we are dealing with the COVID-19, all of us,
It's something that we didn't expect it will happen in our lifetime, but it's a pandemic that is currently happening. And with all measures and effort and also all the things that SAPRA is doing, I think so far you have done very well. I know that there was an issue that was raised by members to force you to take a wrong decision. And I'm happy that you didn't do that, SAPRA. Coming to my questions, I think, Chairperson, before my question, I think the other issue, Chairperson, about vaccines, I think as members of this portfolio, we must lead the society correct. We must not come here with a wrong information, mislead the country. I think, Chairperson, that one, it's very important to mention, because all of us, we know that this thing, it's happening. Also, SAPRA was under attack by other people, Chairperson, which is something that is not right. Coming to the vaccines, Chairperson, and also to the queries that the presenter have mentioned, I know that they will address all the queries and also challenges that are coming forth to SAPRA. But my question, Chairperson, I just want to check with SAPRA, have you received any application from Cuba for vaccine registration so far? Because I hear other members, they will come and tell you about Sputnik, about what. Are those people come for for registration or what? Or they just here around and coming to say, no, I want to make a point. I want to say a
point of order, Chairperson.
So, Chairperson.
Hello. If you can just hold it, please. There's a point of order from Honorable Sheikh Imam.
Honorable Chairperson, I don't think it is fair. We are all equal members of this committee, Chairperson. And we all have the equal opportunity to ask SAPRA and get clarity. The member spends more time attacking other members of this committee. Now, surely, we are independent members of independent ask questions. Now, she can't mention yet, Chairperson, but we are looking for clarity. These are matters that are raised with us by members of the community, by institutions and organizations. So if the member is out of touch with reality, it's not our fault. But she can't come here and spend three quarters of her time, Chairperson, attacking us rather than dealing with the matter on hand, Chairperson. I think you need to protect us, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Sheikh Imam. Honorable Gela, you've heard what the member said. Please continue.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My apology if I offended you, Honorable Sheikh. But Chairperson, that will be my question. And I think, SAPRA, do what you have to do. Do the right thing as SAPRA. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Munyai, and there will be follow-up question by Honorable Ismail.
Thank you very much for this opportunity, esteemed Honorable Chair. I will comment to, based on the presentation, but also I'll raise some issues that will require this portfolio committee attention, attention going forward, and I'm sure the members of SAPRA, they are both scientists and medical. They know what they are doing. They have the capacity to respond to the question that will be raised. Allow me, Honourable Chair, to say that in the advent of of COVID-19 breakthrough, which indeed brought unprecedented consequences in our country. Our country, such as, you know that there's been disruption and overwhelming of the healthcare system. South African government has, you know, really has taken appropriate action, such as seeking vaccine on emergency basis. Esteemed honorable members and honorable chair, it is objective reality and truthful, so far as I know, that vaccine indeed protect our people against severe illness. Hospitalization and to some degree to protect our people against death. Esteemed honorable members and honorable chair, I think ourselves as honorable members, we need to continue to become ambassadors of healthcare. And it is very imperative, I repeat, if we become really ambassadors of vaccination. It is also very imperative that we build a broader front of vaccine champions in honorable members of parliament. And this broad front, amongst others, should include the state-owned entities, faith-based organization, community-based organization, to some degree NGO and the private sector, to make sure that we indeed get our people vaccinated. And I think, you know, it is painful. Let me also say this, Honorable Chair, to say that I wish to send my deepest condolences to KB Mapase, Honorable Member KB Mapase, who was also the president of the MKNVA before it was disbanded. So, but I don't think we need to use this passing on, Honorable Imam Sheikh and Honorable Chair, as a basis for vaccine challenges. Because if that found to be untrue, you know, that could be really have some consequences to all of us. All I'm trying to say, let's allow the family to have time to mourn and not really use this public space to because there could be some, I'm not a medical doctor, I'm not going to really do some passing on analysis, but I'm trying to say that it is very important that we give space for the family to mourn. If really the family might find that is the basis of discussions, it may not go well with them. Honorable Chair, I want also to plead, and now that Sapra is here, that in our next meeting, you find space that we have some discussion about the threat that have been posed against Sapra. And also even going forward, to have a joint meeting with members of the security cluster, so that those that are taking decisions are protected. I don't have to influence them as a politician because it must be based on science. But the fundamental issues, I have no problem of any form of the debate to try to make all of us aware on matter of science to empower us. That indeed are welcome. But I must say, it is important to make sure that we strengthen the autonomy or the independence of Sapra to do their work without fear or favor, but based on science. I'm not a scientist, but it's important that we are also educated through their response on the progress that they would have made and the challenges that we have faced. It is important that they bring that to our urgent attention so that if there are areas of support or the areas of engagement that we need to take at a higher level, we should do so, Honorable Chair and esteemed Honorable Member, without fear or favor. Thank you very much, Honorable Member. I'll be waiting I also want to get to these issues. When we visited KwaZulu-Natal, Prof. Rees and Dr. Smith, we found that certain hospitals, which I think would have to refer this matter to you, they were not reporting some negative outcome or side effects to Sapra, and I'm sure they were reporting that to Center for Communicable Disease alone. We also advise them that they have an obligation to report to the regulator. I'll send you some contact through text after this meeting. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, for giving us this opportunity to communicate, to engage on the matters of vaccine and healthcare, and to get progress on the licensing of the vaccine. And some research that South Africa and the SAHPRA is doing both locally and also abroad. It is very important. I'm looking forward to get that the views that Honorable Imam Sheikh was talking about, of those things, to understand and to learn more. Because all I know, FDA has not supported that the issues of ivermectin, but I don't want to speak prematurely because there might be a science that those scientists that Honorable Member want to put forward may help this committee. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Munyai. We have two follow-up questions. I know that Honorable Ismail wants to raise a follow-up question. We just need to be mindful of time, Honorable Members. And then I see the hand of Honorable Sukacha just to hear. Is that also a follow-up question?
You're correct, Chair. Thank you very much. You're correct, Chair. Thanks.
You will follow after Honorable Ismail. Honorable Ismail, and then Honorable Sukacha, very shortly, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to get information for clarity. Does SAHPRA take any medical information from people when they go get the vaccine and then follow up on their experience? I think this is very important. And do you get any medical information before people get the vaccine to see if the vaccine can be taken with such medication? I'm asking this question so that it gives us a better, opinion. It gives us a better insight on what basis are you basing your actual report when you're giving us feedback. You know, people tend not to go get vaccinated as they do not know the potential reactions of chronic medications that they are on. These are all questions we're asking for clarity and empowerment so that we can advise our constituents thereafter. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation from SAHPRA. And just as a word of encouragement to say that I have noted that SAHPRA is respected worldwide, and therefore I'm very proud when they present a well-structured report and give us information, and let them stay and stick to their credibility, and that not they should not be allow anyone to play with their credibility. I think they are doing a very good job. Chair, just one point of clarity. The one who has been asked by my honourable member Keller on the issue of is there any application from Cuba? That was my interest. And then, Chair, just a point of clarity. I hope Prof will clarify for me the issue. How scientifically correct is this information that is going around? That when people are positive with COVID and they went for vaccination, they die. It's all over the show in our small towns, in the villages, that people are afraid to go and vaccinate because they are saying when you are positive and you went for the vaccination, it causes death. I just want to check with the Prof. Has that been proved scientifically that when you are positive and you went for vaccination, it causes death? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Before I allow SAHPRA to answer those questions, I also want to raise a few points. I think we need to be absolutely mindful of our role as portfolio committee members. I'm going to say again that these meetings are broadcast on national TV. And I am not saying here that any members are doing anything wrong. I have a great concern that the health of our people are determined by the messages which go out there. Now I'm talking about the anti-vaxxers. We're talking about the negative messages on social media. I am talking about, for example, a message that was received on social media about the cause of death of Honorable Mapatso. We do not know whether at this point in time, whether that is any there is any truth in it. I am talking also about members of the health fraternity who also put anti-vaccine messages out there on social media. Initially, there was this huge writings by the media about COVID and speculations about vaccines, etc. I see there's at least a turnaround now where there is a positive approach to the messages which are sent out on media, printed media and digital media at this point in time. I think the question that we really need to ask ourselves as South Africans is the following. What are we going to do to save lives in South Africa? If we can answer that question, then the questions which we raise even here as members of the portfolio committee would be based and would be aimed at supporting that answer. Because that is the most important answer. The trajectory on which our country is currently and where this trajectory is taking our people in terms of their lives and their deaths. And I think essentially it's the fact that we have vaccines. I simply take my approach, and this is anecdotal, this is what I think from having observed, and there are no studies to this effect. What has happened, excuse me, to our healthcare workers? Initially, with the COVID infection, so many of our healthcare workers have passed on due to the COVID infection. And now we hardly hear of any such cases amongst the healthcare workers. And we know that the healthcare workers have received the J&J vaccine. We're also aware that so many people of our society have received the Pfizer vaccine. And now we hear of 32 deaths, of which the point is raised that it is coincidental. I do understand that we need to get a better definition of what really coincidental is. At the level where we are engaging, we need much more clearer understanding. And I heard it being said by members of the committee. And so we will ask Safra to share that information with us. There are also two deaths which have not been yet confirmed. And I also hear there are many questions asked about what is the what are the studies which are being done, or what are the interventions which are being used in order to find the causes of death, whether there is a cause and effect relationship. And I think from what we are being told, what I hear the members are saying is that we just need more information. We need to be able to have more information shared with us. I myself do not have any questions because so many questions have been raised, and I just wanted to give that input for us as members of the committee to be mindful of what we say on a platform where it is televised, whether it is on national TV or whether it is on TV, the Parliament TV program, that we are very mindful of what people will say and what the effects of our own words would be on the lives of people of South Africa. So before I see there's a hand up, and really I would think we'd want to move on after this, honourable members, I'm going to take only this one hand unless it is an old hand of honourable Munyai. And then I'm going to ask Safra to please respond. And another hand going up, Honorable Sheikh Imam. Please, those two very shortly, 30 seconds each. Thank you.
Through you, Honorable Chair, all I'm trying to say that the concrete proposal made by Honorable Sheikh to have a scientist discussion at this portfolio committee, that I say without fear of any doubt that we must proceed with that process. We want a scientist, let's come and engage on the matter. Because we should not be afraid. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think to a very large extent you've covered me and Honorable Munai. we on the ground don't know much about this. People are confused. You are correct with all the social media reports and negativity around everything. We've all grew up with vaccines, although now there are questions about vaccines. And I think that discussion we're talking about, Chairperson, let that discussion unfold. That will give clarity to people, and I think it will convince people that, yes, indeed, they are in the right direction. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
All right. Thank you very much, honorable members. Professor Rees and Dr. Semeti, you are very welcome to provide your responses to the questions raised. Thank you.
Honorable Jacobs and honorable members, thank you very much for so many questions. And at the outset, I would agree that I think many of the things that are being raised deserve perhaps a more in-depth debate with many other role players here. Because I do agree with everyone that the kinds of questions that are being asked deserve clarification, deserve evidence-based answers, and we probably don't have time to do it justice. But I'm going to say several things which I think are really important, because as Honourable Jacobs has said, we are talking also to our public. So I'm the chair of the board of SAHPRA, and the CEO is with us, and she will answer some of the technical questions. Because I am a clinician and a scientist, I will also contribute to some of the technical questions that you've asked. But the first thing I want to say, and I know that we've said this before, but I really think it's very, very important, is that some of what is happening here is that the mandate of SAHPRA is getting confused with the mandate of many other entities. And I'm going to give you a little list of some other ministerial entities, statutory bodies, who have very significant mandates in the context of this pandemic. So SAHPRA can only do what is within its mandate, and it can contribute, as we are doing here, definitely to the public debate. But SAHPRA is a drug regulatory authority. Pretty much every country in the world has a drug regulatory authority, because over the last 20 years, many countries that had either no drug regulatory authority or quite weak drug regulatory authorities have recognized how important this structure is. And you can see from the questions from the honorable members, everyone recognizes how important this structure is. But I want to remind us that before the pandemic came, SAHPRA has been regarded as one of the top regulatory authorities in the African region, in low middle income countries, is recognized by the World Health Organization. It is so well recognized, it is one of the reasons that we are now going to be recognizing in the next week the fact that the country has been awarded a vaccine manufacturing hub, which includes a WHO assessment. And one of the reasons they listed is because we have a strong, independent drug regulatory authority. So that's the first thing to say, is that before the pandemic, I think hopefully most of the honorable members would recognize that we have a really good, diligent drug regulatory authority. Was it perfect? Certainly not. We had a backlog. We've discussed this with Parliament, and we're trying to rectify that. But what it did mean for the citizens of this country is that they have been able to go into a pharmacy, to go to a clinic, to have an operation, to get their child treated, and know that the drugs or the vaccines or the health products that they're getting are safe, are monitored by the regulator, and that they do what they claim to do. And that isn't true for many countries still in the world today, that you cannot rely on the safety of the products that are in front of you. And if you can't rely on the safety of medicines, it means that when you need an antibiotic for an infection, you can't rely on that. And it means that you can't rely on the fact that the quality of the product is good enough so that it is safe. And it means that when you go for an anesthetic, you would not be able to rely either on the safety of the drips that are put in your arm or the products that you're given to put you to sleep. That is how critical a drug regulatory authority is. It is a pillar. It's a silent pillar mostly. Mostly people don't have to think about it. It's a silent but critical pillar of our healthcare system. And if we don't have an effective drug regulatory authority, all of those things I've just described can no longer be taken for granted. Now, in the pandemic, SAPRA has had to roll up its sleeves like every other entity, like government has had to do as well, and do things differently, do things rapidly, make decisions on the hoof, and SAPRA's had to do that as well. So we have set up special committees to advise the CEO on the decisions that are taken, special committees that are looking at COVID clinical trials, that are looking at COVID vaccines, special committees that are looking at other COVID products, special committees that are advising on the medical devices side, all dedicated to COVID and advising the CEO, because it is the CEO who takes these decisions and she gets advice from the best experts that can be summoned in the country. So it's not just her by herself or her with her very competent staff. It is her and the staff and a lot of really first-class academic experts who are really expert in their field. The board has oversight, but the board has also rolled up its sleeves and given as much support as we can to the CEO, who I want to put on record, has done an incredible job during this pandemic, given that she was new and she was plunged into this. So the second thing I would want to say is, yeah, we've had to do things differently and speedily, but that say it is the same SAPRA that we recognized as a country gave us safe health products, safe medicines, and safe vaccines before the pandemic. And the mode of operation has not changed. But we remain an independent authority. And you as Parliament have approved the legislation that makes the drug regulator an independent authority. And it's important that it's independent, because then it cannot be and should not be influenced by any consideration other than the safety, the quality, and the effectiveness of the medicines and the health products that are made available to the citizens of this country, all done with the public good and the public health good in mind. This is the same authority. We're not dealing with a different entity that was suddenly woke up one morning and has decided to behave badly. This is an authority that is an honest and an authority with a great deal of integrity. And it's an evidence-based authority. So that's the starting point. Now, having said that, I'm just going to answer some of I just want to just perhaps suggest something else, because I do think that with the pressure that's on everybody listening to the questions, that some of the questions are saying, can you do this? Can you do that? And I just want to list some of the other entities that are either ministerial entities or statutory entities that are also working in this COVID space in the health sector to support the Minister of Health and the Department of Health. We've heard about NICEC. This is a ministerial committee looking independently at the safety of vaccines. We have a National Essential Medicines List Committee, which looks at all medicines and vaccines that are put into the public sector and independently evaluates them for their effectiveness and their cost effectiveness as well. We have a National Advisory Group on Immunization that looks at all matters and advises the minister on all matters to do with vaccines. They do not at the moment look at the COVID vaccines, because we have a vaccine ministerial advisory committee to supplement and complement the NAGI. We have a vaccine ministerial advisory committee. We have a ministerial advisory committee. We have the MRC, our Medical Research Council, which is a statutory body, and our Health Sciences Research Council, similarly a statutory body, who are given a huge responsibility in coordinating research. We have first-class academics in this country, and I'll talk a little bit more about the genomics just now, but we've heard a lot about these variants emerging. That's an example of the quality of the academics. But we've also had, and the question was asked about vaccine trials. Indeed, we have some first-class vaccinologists, first-class clinical trialists. I think we're all familiar with the head of the MRC, Professor Glenda Gray, and Professor Shabir Mahdi, who has led, both of whom have led some of the clinical trials in the COVID vaccines that we're now looking at. And we have a Department of Health who has to take all of this together and make the decisions about which vaccines they're going to purchase, how they're going to roll it out, how it's going to be prioritized, but with all of this input and background. And in the event that people are not happy, we also have an ombudsman. So I'm sure I've missed out many things. But what I want to say is SACRA is just one part of this. Now, we would be very happy to come and have a further dialogue in depth, as honourable members have requested, to really sort of go into the science of some of these things. That wouldn't be a problem. And we can get first-class scientists and have a robust debate. That would not be a problem. But I think the problem is that we can't say to the Drug Regulator Authority, answer everything, fix everything, do everything, when actually, the Minister of Health and the Department of Health are the doers outside all of those fabrics that I've just described. Now, I want to now just talk about vaccines and just sort of really some of the, try and capture some of the questions, specifically on the science of the vaccines. Dr. Simetti will ask some of the very specific operational questions that have been asked. So the first thing is that, as we know, there are very few vaccines in the world that are 100% effective. Many vaccines are partially effective, and many vaccines act by reducing the severity of disease or preventing symptoms developing, even if you have a low-grade infection. But 100% effective vaccines are a rare thing indeed. And similarly, none of the COVID vaccines are 100% effective. And the different vaccines that we're looking at will have different levels of efficacy. Importantly, for the vaccines that are in the most advanced stage, with all of the early clinical trials, all of these vaccines showed that they reduced severe disease, hospitalization, and death. Now, what's happened because of the emergence of the variants is that the efficacy of those vaccines, these variants are learning ways to resist our immune responses, whether it is from natural infection that we've developed immunity or from the vaccines. All of these variants are learning ways to resist that. So the effectiveness of all the vaccines has dropped somewhat, but it has not gone away. But every time we get a new variant, for example, the Delta variant that swept through, as we know, in our third wave, we then have to say, how effective are the vaccines that we've got that are in development against this variant? Because they might have been very effective right at the beginning, but their effectiveness could have dropped. And the bar that we've set for ourselves, and this is an international bar, is to say 50% effectiveness is a minimum that we would expect. But we also know that many of the vaccines, even if they'll reduce quite significantly still severe disease, hospitalization, they're good at doing that. They're not necessarily as good at stopping asymptomatic infection and mild to moderate disease. And that's one of the problems. And that's why we're saying, even if you have a vaccine, you can still get infected. The use of the vaccine is to stop that severe end of the disease. But you can still get infected, even if it's asymptomatic or milder. Please wear a mask. Because if you're infected, you can infect others. And there are many vulnerable groups out there, whether it's age or comorbidities, that you can inadvertently infect. But vaccines, and the question was, are we monitoring how vaccines work worldwide? Well, we certainly are, is one of the most important questions. And Dr. Simetti will talk about it. But in South Africa, we have, led by NICD, MRC, academics, we are looking all the time at the effectiveness of vaccines once we roll them out. And we look at that in different ways. We look at how are they responding to new variants. We do that in the laboratory and look at antibodies. But we also look at what are called breakthrough infections. We say, when we see people in hospitals, are we seeing people who've been vaccinated being hospitalized? If so, what was the variant? Is it a new variant? When were they vaccinated? Are we seeing breakthrough infections because this vaccine or that vaccine is not as good at fighting off that particular variant? That is being monitored all the time. But in terms of sort of big worldwide messages, just a couple of things that I think we've all heard and observed is that the US, they're calling now the huge numbers. They have the largest numbers of cases, the largest numbers of deaths in the world at the moment from COVID. And they're calling it a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Because who they are seeing in the hospitals, who they are seeing dying predominantly are people who unfortunately have not received vaccines. Similarly, in the UK, they've managed, because they started early, they've managed to vaccinate very high percentages of their population, including high coverage of the most vulnerable, the elderly, the comorbidities. But they're also vaccinating very aggressively and testing very aggressively, and they've got their vaccination figures right up. They're still seeing cases. They're still seeing cases at a number, but they are not seeing the deaths in the way that they were seeing before they got their vaccination up. So now, one of the ways we're going to evaluate, we've talked about effectiveness, one of the ways we'll evaluate effectiveness is to look at what's happening in other countries and understand the effectiveness of vaccines. And some of these are the vaccines that we're using. And certainly, with all the vaccines that we have approved, we will be looking and working with other countries to see what is the effectiveness. And WHO has committees that are looking at this on a daily basis and are giving global guidance. The other question, some sort of very practical questions, and it makes me realize we do need to do such a much better job of communication. If you get the vaccine, if you have COVID infection, what is the current guidance from the Department of Health? The current guidance that is being given is if you have active symptoms and a COVID infection, don't take the vaccine during that period. When you have COVID infection, your own immune system is kicking in and it's trying to fight back. So you've got a lot of response in your immune system. If we give a vaccine as well, we're going to stimulate your immune system from two sides. And that could cause side effects and problems that we don't know. It just might make you feel, you know, that your immune system is overstimulated. You might feel ill. There's no question that this is going to kill you in any sense, but it just might give you a huge immune response. So what we're recommending to avoid that is to say to people, wait for 30 days after your symptoms are finished, or after if you have no symptoms but have a positive test, wait for 30 days and then have the vaccine, because by then your own immune system will be established, will have fought off the COVID virus, and then you'll have that immune system. Then we could give the vaccine. So another question that was asked is, can you give the vaccine? In fact, it's really, really good if you've had a COVID infection and you've got natural immunity to have a shot of that vaccine, because that really will stimulate your immune system in a very effective manner. And it's quite safe to do it, and we're strongly recommending that people do get the vaccine after immunization. And certainly this issue of do people die if they're positive? No. The reason we say 30 days is just to avoid side effects that might be enhanced if you have a COVID infection and we give you a vaccine at the same time. But it's not about dying, not at all. There are no reports of that, and that hasn't been reported to my knowledge, and I serve on World Health Organization committees anywhere in the world. So that isn't the concern. The concern is side effects. And then finally, I'll perhaps comment on the first question, which was about the new variant. You know, we are very fortunate in South Africa that we do have a very active group of academics around the country who are monitoring these variants. So they are picking up emergence of new variants. So this C1.2 variant that many people will have heard of is the latest variant that has been detected. It was detected in May. It only represents about 2% of the current testing that's going on, but it's been detected in 8 of our 9 provinces. But it's also been detected in 8 countries around the world, from Europe, Asia, other countries in the African region, the Western Pacific region. So it's widely detected. But it's not doing at the moment, what we have seen the Delta variant do, which is really take off, which we're all familiar with now. But the changes in this particular variant, we've seen in earlier variants. And the concern is that some of the changes, the mutations that we see, suggest that this might be a variant that could be more transmissible or could be better at evading our immune system, at resisting our immune response. So that is why we're watching it very closely. But at the moment, we have not seen that it's been taken off, that it's taken off. But what we do need to do, and we have laboratories here in NICD and various academic institutions who are doing excellent work. For each variant that we see in this country, we will be testing the vaccines that we have against that variant to make sure the vaccines that we are rolling out remain effective. And then I just finally want to say to Honourable Jacobs, thank you very much for your last comment. I mean, you know, I know people are frustrated and you know, you can hear the frustration and the anger. But I think we're all in this together. And you know, SAFRA is here to work with you as parliamentarians, to work with the Department of Health, to work with our communities. We want to save lives. That's what we want to do. And we're totally committed to doing that. And we're very committed to ongoing dialogue. So thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much, Professor Rees, Dr. Semete.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the members for all these questions. We do appreciate them because we also see this platform as a platform really that shares, you know, some of the questions that are on the ground, some of these questions we have, you know, received as SAFRA before. And so we're happy to engage. I mean, what the pandemic has highlighted is the need for us as a regulator to continuously communicate. Communicate what it is that we do, communicate how we do what we do, and engage with the public. And so we thank you for this. But also, I think if I just touch on Prof. Rees' last comment, is that as a regulator, the safety of the public is paramount. So wherein we are made aware of any safety concerns, we do act on those. And so again, we will respond to the questions that we can today, and those that we would need to come back to, we're happy to do that in a written format. I think the matter of the variants of concern has been addressed. And just the point that I would like to mention is that we continuously monitor this, as Prof. Rees has said. But also there is a global community, it's called the ICR MRA, wherein SAFRA, as well as Nigeria, the two African regulators, that are part of that, and we look at this data with other regulators. So we are part of the global discussions around these variants, around the safety of the vaccines. And so, you know, we are keeping abreast on these developments. If I could just reflect on, there were quite a number of questions around the safety of the vaccines. And again, I just would like to reflect on this, and my colleagues, Posh and Bafang, may want to come in. This is an area that indeed is under our mandate as SAFRA. But again, we don't work alone in this case. As I've indicated in the slide, NYSEC is a very important committee that we work with. But also within SAFRA, we have our pharmacovigilance committee that also has experts. And so we've put together, you know, this group of experts that look at every single case. So for us to, you know, come to a conclusion where we say it's coincidental, we've gone through a lot of information, and I'm really happy to, maybe the next engagement we should be having, Chair, is around just how we do the safety assessment. In the webinar that we did, we went through detail, and we even shared with the public the type of forms that need to be completed and the type of information that we require. You will also see this in our microsite, where we indicate, you know, we need details of what other medication were these individuals on. What other ailments do they have? So it's a very detailed exercise that we go through. We look at the age. If I could just reflect on the ones that, you know, we have indicated that are coincidental. And in essence, what we mean is that their death is not related to them having been vaccinated. And probably 98% of these 30 were the elderly that received their vaccines quite early on in the rollout, when we were focusing on those who are 60 and above. And again, we've done detailed assessments. So we look at matters of the age of the individual, any comorbidities, any medication that they're on. And I'm happy for us to bring our colleagues, you know, in our pharmacovigilance committee, as well as NYSEC, for us to take you through a detail. I think that needs a separate session because it's quite a detailed exercise that we go through. I think we cannot engage enough with the public around safety. We are very cognizant of the need for us to constantly engage. I've mentioned some of the webinars that we are planning, but also, you know, we've reached out to some NGOs. I mean, as recent as yesterday, I was talking to one where we're saying, we even want to do this work and share these messages in our indigenous languages, I am of the view that that's where we also have a gap as SAPRA. We have engaged, you know, with the public through other local radio stations, but we're not doing it enough. And this is something that we will be focusing on as we partner with others to ensure really that we disseminate this message quite extensively across the country. So I will be the first to acknowledge really that there's a lot more that we can do and that we will be doing around communication. Thank you. In terms of the state, from a safety perspective, also if I could just reflect on this, we haven't seen any specific adverse effects that you see in certain age groups. So especially now that we have, you know, rolled out the vaccines and we've started now as a country from 18 years and above, and so we'll start to get that data, but we're not seeing any age-specific related. But again, these are aspects that we continuously monitor. I mean, the slides that I shared with you are really just a drop in the ocean in terms of the amount of data that we look at, the amount of analysis you've looked at from an age perspective. You know, what are the types of reports that we're getting? And we're not seeing anything that is alarming and is a cause of concern at this point. Prof. Reed spoke around, you know, being COVID positive and receiving a vaccine. So I want to comment on that. If I can then just move now to the questions around AstraZeneca. We received the application. I don't have the exact dates, and we're happy to come back to you in a written format. We received the application sometime in December, and the authorization was late in January. And again, as I've indicated, I mean, we would look at all the elements as to that, you know, those eight processes that are indicated. We looked at the manufacturing site, and in this case, it was the Serum Institute. It was a GMP compliance site. We didn't have any queries, so that did indeed fast track. If you remember at the time, the bulk of the data we had was around the original strain, which the, you know, the applicants had. Remember also that in the country, this is one of the vaccines wherein clinical trials were conducted in the country. So we had that data readily available. And again, to demonstrate our commitment to the public safety, is that the minute we took note that there is reduced efficacy on this, as is was shared with us by the applicant as well as the principal investigator of the study, the country then made a decision to not roll it out. Again, another demonstration that we are concerned and the safety of the public is paramount. When the J&J batches were not compliant with good manufacturing practices, we again aligned ourselves with the FDA and we were engaging with the FDA quite closely as well as the European Medicines Agency. And the three of us agreed that these are not the batches that we should really release to the public. So as a regulator, we are of the view that we're able to make decisions, you know, in the safety of the public of the public in South Africa. So in terms of AstraZeneca, I hope that I've covered the questions. So the questions was, when did we receive it? When did we authorize it? Did we have enough information? And I've spoken to the clinical information that was then provided to us. If I could also just reflect on our processes, and indeed we made, you know, we've agreed on the minimum requirement. But even in that, we are stringent. I mean, the process that I've taken you through is quite a rigorous process. You know, you've got other, you know, countries wherein they will fully rely on a decision that is made by another authority or maybe by the WHO. In our case, we said because of the nuances that we're seeing locally in terms of this epidemic, the variants of concern, we will conduct an evaluation of every single dossier. So whether it is authorized by the WHO, which is great, we are able to consider their reports, rely on aspects of the reports, but we do our own assessment. So at a time, we've got evaluators that will look at the quality aspects. We've got evaluators that will look at the safety aspects as well as the clinical efficacy aspects of every vaccine. So while we agreed on these minimum requirements that I've alluded to, I mean, for example, one of them is that the vaccines must have a minimum threshold of 50% vaccine efficacy. We've also articulated what is the minimum phase three data that is required, and that until we then get the full phase three, these vaccines would be under emergency use listing. And so those are some of the mechanisms that we have then put in place. But I can say with confidence that we have done stringent reviews of these. There were then questions around what it is that other applicants have provided that the ones that are still in review have not provided. You know, we did touch on this to indicate that the key aspect in most cases, and I can't discuss every application in detail, we're bound by confidentiality, but I can just speak to this, you know, at general terms. So when it comes to the two aspects really that are causing delays with these applications pertain to the GMP compliance of the respective sites. If there are queries that are outstanding for us, we will not be able to address that. And remember, in the vaccines that we're considering now being the Russian Sputnik vaccine and the Sinopharm, these are vaccines that are not manufactured in the country. So the applicants then have to engage with their principals to ensure that they are able to get the required information. In some instances, they need to translate, you know, the report, because as South Africa, we've been, you know, very clear. As SAPRA, we operate in the English medium of language. And so there are some delays that we encounter in that respect. The other very important area where we do find that there are delays usually is around the clinical data for the variants of concern. And also, I mean, one of the other requirements we've had is that we've said even lab-based data. And so there are instances where applicants don't have that information readily. So they submit and they indicate to us that they will do what we call a rolling review submission. You may have seen in some of the slides, we've indicated that there's certain sequences. And those sequences would speak to you submit, you provide sequence one. We review sequence one. And when you're ready, you provide sequence two, we would review that. So a lot, again, you know, depends on how ready the applicant is with the information that is required by the authority. And then we would review that and provide them the required feedback. So that's typically, you know, the process that we would follow in terms of this evaluation. I just want to mention, I mean, there was a point to say that there's been no engagement with Sputnik. We've got two applicants for Sputnik. I can say with confidence that we have engaged with these applicants, and even with, and may his soul rest in peace, the CEO of Lamar, Mr. Jerome Smith, I had engagements with them where we provided them feedback. We were engaging with their responsible pharmacist. I was being copied in the email communication between them and my team. And so there has indeed been discussions and engagements. I just want to reflect then on the and Prof. Rees in terms of the breakthrough infections, and just to add to that, to say again in an assessment that we would do for a vaccine, we would always look at the benefit risk. And it's been accepted globally that the benefit of being vaccinated far outweighs the risk. And yes, while there is some risk, we're monitoring that risk through the mechanisms that we've put in place from a safety perspective. The last point that I would like to just reflect on is on the surgical mesh. And I would like to propose here that I come back to the committee on this, and I'm happy to provide a report to the member. My team is indeed looking at this matter. I didn't come prepared to engage with this because we have been talking to the manufacturers of these products, and I know my team is working on it. And so I'm happy to, in the next coming days, share an update or a report on this. But for today, I didn't come prepared to discuss the matter on the surgical mesh. Chair, I think we have covered all the questions. I don't know if my colleagues, Portia and Dosang, have anything to add.
Through you, Chair, nothing, CEO, you have covered everything. Thank you.
Yes, I agree. Everything has been covered. Although I was wondering if the chair's last anecdotal account of increasing deaths in the rollout has been understood. The coincidence between the rollout of the Pfizer and the age groups that are being exposed to the Pfizer vaccine. And obviously the comorbidities that go with an older age. I trust that has been covered with all the responses from the chair and the CEO. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Yes, anyone else from your team? If not, thank you very much for your presentation and also the answers to all the questions which were raised with you. I was about to summarize some points which came out of here, but I noticed the hand of Honorable Gela. So before I continue, I need to take that hand. And then two more hands, Honorable Munyai and Honorable Dr. Semete. Dr. Semete, the CEO. Thank you. Honorable Gela first, Honorable Munyai next, and then Dr.
I also raised my hand. Stephen, I also raised my hand. Please also note me.
All right. I'm going to rearrange that order now. Is that Honorable Sukas?
It's Honorable Chirwa.
Honorable Chirwa. Then there is also Honorable Sukas. So I am going to rearrange the order. I just please want us to be mindful of the time. We still have a very long item. Where we need to approve the documents of the oversight visits. So I'm going to rearrange now. It would be Gela, it would be Munyai, it would be Chirwa, and then Sukas, and then Dr. Semete. Thank you, in that order.
Chairperson, my question was not answered. I've asked a question whether a SAPRA has received any application from Cuba for vaccine registration. Thank you, Chair.
Dr. Semete will know that in a reply. Honorable Munyai?
No, I wanted to appreciate the response that has been put forward by SAPRA. And also that the agreement to engage with the scientists of debate in this portfolio, that would be very exciting. And also experts must come and engage here. That's very exciting. But my last comment, Honorable Chair, is that indeed, as a esteemed Honorable Members of Parliament, we have a moral obligation, and it's also a national duty to make sure that really we mobilize and organize our people for vaccination, as I outlined earlier, but also to have a much more strengthened campaign against the the fake news, which is not based on science but voodoo, and also to some degree make sure that we make sure that this mass media campaign by Ministry of Health down to the people, and at least the experience of KwaZulu-Natal, Operation Savaland, of taking vaccine to the people, that will help our country in many respects. Thank you.
Honorable Chirwa.
Sorry, thank you very much, Chairperson. I think in the interest of, preserving a cordial engagement, there must at least be an acknowledgement on the developments linked to the physical mesh issue. I raised it with SAPRA. The CEO responded and told me that they've never heard or received any grievance regarding physical mesh. I raised it with the NDOH on two occasions. And when they start making amends and fixing the issue that was raised in the portfolio committee, they did not bother to alert or to inform us of what the issue is or how they're going about concessions. So the issue that they will respond to me later, I don't think suffices, especially because the CEO is unable to make a recollection of our historical engagements regarding this issue. It is primarily an important thing because he misled the portfolio committee. This is not a lie. Even in our minutes as well, and I fought for it to be included in our minutes, because I asked them, why have you ever received a grievance? And then she said no, and that's why she can't respond to it, or that SAPRA can't investigate the issue because they've never received a grievance regarding surgical mesh. Only to note that it's actually been years since they've been engaging on the issue of surgical mesh. And there's been other health regulatory systems in the country, I mean entities in the world that are dealing with the issue of surgical mesh. And our health regulatory entity is beating around the bush regarding this matter. We want to know, I particularly want to know, on the background and what prompted gathering all that information, the process that you're now following, and also make a recollection of that first engagement. In the very least, take stock and actually excuse that particular contribution on that particular date. You have misled this portfolio committee and told us that you've never received a grievance when you know you have a three-year-old grievance in your office regarding surgical mesh, and that there's various other regulatory bodies around the world dealing with this particular issue, and other health ministries around the world dealing with this issue. So this thing of that they'll come back and report to me when they fail to do that, after it's been 3 months already since I raised this issue initially, it cannot suffice. And I'm going to need the chairperson to protect me as a member of this portfolio committee and not allow SAPRA to be able to bully us when it comes to the portfolio committee. It cannot happen. It cannot be just lie. No, I'm not done. It cannot be that you can just come to the portfolio committee and lie and then come and tell us, yeah, we are investigating. We'll tell you what's the update. When I've been asking you consistently on this particular issue, take stock of the fact that you lied, firstly, and then update us. What are these investigations that you're conducting? It's a simple thing.
Thank you, Honorable Chairwa.
I'm not done, Chairperson. I'm almost done. Can you give me just a chance? And I'm also saying on the top of the fact that even Professor Helen Rees is coming here and telling us that the work of SAPRA is so important because people can use medicines and stuff like that without having a foreign anxiety. That is not the reality. For all these cases of litigation against the NTOH, majority of them are in regards to the kinds of medicines that were used on their bodies. Surgical mesh even included. There's even activism happening in this country, mobilizing and organizing on the issue of surgical mesh. And you've never addressed it. And then today, after we've raised it consistently, you want to tell me that you would give me a report privately outside. No, it cannot work like that. Just apologize that you lied the other time you came as a CEO of SAPRA and told me you've never received a grievance regarding surgical mesh. You lied to the Portfolio Committee of Parliament, and then taking from
there. Can I please intervene and ask you to choose your words properly, please?
They must choose their lies and their true profile.
We've raised the point of choosing the word
No. Chairperson, you see, we're doing it again. We are doing it again.
I'm asking you very nicely. Please,
What do we call it when someone does not tell the truth, Chairperson? Tell me, teach me English. What is it?
All right. I'm going to rule on this, Honorable Chair.
I already know your ruling. I know you protect
people. No, my ruling is that
they are independent. But you cannot even protect your own members. As a chairperson, you can't protect your own portfolio committee members. You can't protect your own portfolio committee members as a chairperson. First day at work, second day at work, you can't protect us. We can't raise our ideas. We can't raise our grievances. You want to silence us and you raise us. As a chairperson, I'm proud.
Can you give me a moment to speak?
Are you proud? Are you proud of yourself as a chairperson that you are silencing the portfolio committee?
I am not silencing you. I'm asking you to give me a moment to speak. You don't need to speak 1,000 words on one topic. You know, you don't have to repeat the same point over and over. We do understand what you are.
I thought the interest is the health of people, Chairperson. Did you not say that? People are dying because of surgical mesh.
No,
is that not
what you said?
Proposal.
I'm
is trying
that not
to
what
help
you said? Honorable Chirwa, I'm trying to help you by making a proposal on what you've just raised. And I am going to ask that written reply that is sent to you should also be sent to the Portfolio Committee. And that will allow you to raise this point again. When you get a reply from Dr. Semete, that reply will also be forwarded to our portfolio committee. And I was going to make that proposal. Thank you very much. Honorable Sukers?
Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, I just need to clarify, maybe my question was not clear. What I asked, and I will clarify like this before I put the question for, again. Our people do not, most of our people, especially in our rural areas, will not be reading the issues that was raised or the answer that was given by Professor Helen Rees. What our people do listen to is the experiences of the people that live next to them, the people within their communities. That is what informs their decisions. My question was, should people not be informed that they rather need to test for COVID before they go for a vaccine? The reason being that there are many cases where people took the vaccine and then died within a week or 2 weeks or became severely ill and hospitalized. Now, I do not know what is, Dr. Rees has now said there will be adverse effects that people would suffer if they do take a, if they COVID positive and they get the vaccine. I am not talking about when somebody knows that they COVID positive. I am asking, should it not be that people rather test themselves before they go for a vaccination? And I base the question on the fact that we've had incidences and lived experiences of people not testing for COVID, but going for the vaccine and then falling severely ill or dying. And that is an experience. And we also need to recognize most people are not interested in the mandates of SAHPRA. They're not interested in all of that. They don't even read any of the research or any of newspaper articles even. And we have not done a great job of empowering people to make decisions on their own health. And that is across the board, whether it be government, NDOH, or whether it be other institutions that within their mandate are responsible to inform the public. So that was my question. Then the second thing, what is not clear for the committee, I am certain, is how the CEO now has again emphasized the stringent requirements that was applied before the approval was given. It still does not answer the question for us on AstraZeneca. I have now just failed, Chairperson, to look at what was the efficacy rate that was reported by that small trial that on the Monday was released that then caused the chaos in the hen coop around AstraZeneca. But we still don't understand if that stringent requirements was then applied. How come that this was purchased? And that approval was given for AstraZeneca and then that the withdrawal, obviously, of AstraZeneca. It's not clear to me then. Let me rather not speak for the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, honourable members. That concludes our part. We will get the responses from Dr. Semete. And then after this, there are a few points coming from this meeting which I want to raise before we ask the members from SAHPRA to then leave our platform. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'd have raised my hand because I noted the questions that we had omitted to respond to. I'll start with, there was a question around whether these vaccines have been authorized for the under 18. Just to say that at this point, they have not been. We have received data from one of the applicants, for between 12 years and 17 years of age, and that data is currently under evaluation. So as we speak, all the vaccines are for those who are over 18. The other point I had missed to comment on is on the question around or the recommendation for us to deliberate with other experts that may have a different view. Again, we're very happy to do so. So if the honourable member can indeed help us to then schedule that engagement, that would be greatly appreciated. The other point is on Cuba. No, we have not received an application from Cuba. And, you know, just to say that for us as a regulatory authority, we cannot go out and solicit applications. So we only review what has been submitted to us as a regulator. And as of today, we don't have an application from Cuba. In terms of the questions around the AstraZeneca, and I'm not sure which trial the member is referring to, but if you're referring to the trial that indicated a reduced efficacy against the, at the time it was the beta variant. So what had happened is that when we reviewed the data from AstraZeneca at the time, it is when it was still the wild type variant that was circulating. I mean, we found out, or the information about the new variant was released, I think it was a week or 2 weeks after we had authorized. And I think it speaks to the nature of the pandemic that we find ourselves in that there's constantly emerging data, and we need to keep abreast on that. And based on the emerging data, as I've indicated, all the applicants would then need to update us on the vaccine efficacy for each of their vaccines against the, at the time, the prevalent variant of concern. So with the AstraZeneca, the initial authorization was on the wild type. And after we had authorized it, that's when then the news broke in the country through the genomics group that the beta variant at the time was the dominant one. And when they then provided us with that data, that's when, and then a decision, because I think the efficacy it demonstrated then was around 20%, which is below the threshold of 50, and hence it could then not be made available. And so those are the regular, you know, engagements that we would have with the applicants. And again, just a last comment on the surgical mesh. Again, this was not a matter that was on the agenda. And as I've committed, Chair, we will share the report with the portfolio committee, as you had indicated. Thank you. Prof. Rees, I think, wants to come in.
Thank you. Just to pick up, if I may, on Honourable Speaker's comments. I strongly agree with a lot of what you've said, and I want to answer something. The first thing is, I utterly agree with you that the public is not in the least interested in the mandate of SAHPRA. As I say, you know, normally in normal times, a drug regulatory authority should be doing their job and behind the scenes, but as a critical pillar of the health sector. But they shouldn't necessarily be in front, except when it comes to communicating with the public about the safety and effectiveness of medicines. And it's something that SAHPRA is working on, so that when we see that something is unsafe and on the shelf and it's withdrawn, we let people know, or we see that there are bad practices. For example, we've picked up concerns about the use of codeine cough mixture. That sort of thing is what the drug regulator should be front-ending with populations. And I totally agree with you. This is not of all the other stuff is, you know, should be sort of below the line, if you like, and we should get on and do it as a regulatory authority. But I want to also agree with what is being said here, and it's been said in different ways. I don't think we are doing a good job at all in terms of communicating on vaccine safety, on vaccine questions, on the need to get vaccinated. And I think, as some of the honourable members have said, the dialogue in chats and so on, and the anecdotes that we're hearing are frightening people. But I would like to say SAHPRA will work absolutely hand in hand with Parliament. But I would also then put this back to Parliament to say, you have constituencies. What can you help us develop a better communication strategy? In my day job, I'm an academic, and even last night I was in dialogue with media experts saying, how do we do this better? So I would actually appeal to you as parliamentarians and representatives of the citizens of this country to say, can you help us with this? Because I think overall we need to do a better job. And in terms of the question that you asked about, is there a need to test? If you have symptoms of COVID, irrespective of vaccine or no vaccine, but if you have symptoms suggestive of COVID, everybody should go and get a test. It's good that you know whether or not you have a COVID infection, because that could influence your future management. But it's important that you know that for the people around you. Are you in contact with elderly people, with vulnerable people, etc.? So if you have symptoms, please get a test. If you've been in very close contact with somebody who has tested positive, please get a test. And what we're saying then is, if you have symptoms, do not get immunized at that time. It is not because I have not seen any cases of associated death because you got immunized at the same time as having COVID infections. I have not seen reported cases of that. And that's talking with a hat on from various WHO committees. But what we are saying is if you stimulate from two ends, if you like, your immune system, you might well get worse side effects than the kinds of things that many people experience after some of the vaccines, you know, muscle aches, fatigue, headache. You know, you could get worse side effects if we overstimulate the immune system at a time when you're fighting the infection. So we're not saying that everybody has to get tested. If you're feeling well and you haven't been in contact with anyone with COVID, you can go and get a vaccine very safely. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members and the delegation from SABRA. I'm going to summarize a number of points very shortly. In fact, it's only in terms of the future engagements which we are going to have. Now, we've understood many of the points raised, but we also understand that there are many questions, many things which do bother the members of this portfolio committee. So we have discussed that we will have a special date for SABRA to return to us to answer some of these questions. We will also have the reply to Honorable Chirwa in writing by the CEO, and that same writing will be forwarded to the portfolio committee. We will also have a joint meeting with the Security Cluster Committee with regards to attacks on SABRA. We will also have another discussion with a panel of scientists with SABRA, with in-depth discussion so that we can understand a bit better how these assessments are made, how the applications are made, and how your authorization is given. I think that will really assist us not to have the same discussion so many times. And it's very imperative that we do understand your processes. We do hear what you're saying, that you shouldn't be so much in the front line. And yet it is a very difficult time with COVID now, epidemic in South Africa, not having something that we had foreseen, but we are now where we are. And we'd appreciate that kind of discussion with yourselves. I'm trying to see if I have missed anything. And then for later, the question on forced sterilizations and the proposal by Honorable Chirwa is something that we will also take forward. And as far as yourselves, the other discussions we will be continuing with, I think these ones are the ones which were raised in this discussion. So thank you very much for coming today, and thank you for your presentation and also for the answers, and we will be in touch with yourselves. Thank you. You are very welcome to leave the platform.
Thank you.
We have some other things we need to discuss. Honourable members, stay on.
Honourable Jacobs, thank you very much. On behalf of the SABRA board, I'm sure on behalf of Dr. Semete as well, I'm sure we would like to thank you. These engagements are actually extremely helpful. They do give us a sense of what is concerning people on the ground, and we must respond to it. But thank you very much.
It's quite a pleasure. Can we ask the secretary, acting secretary, to just flight our agenda again on the system? We have one more item, members, and that is the oversight reports. We will start with the one to KZN, hopefully, or whichever one is flighted first.
Oops.
Thank you. Just scroll that a bit.
Oh, you can see it. Good.
All right, so the first one on our agenda is the consideration and adoption of the oversight report to KwaZulu-Natal, followed by the consideration and adoption of the oversight report to Gauteng, and then we will have some closing remarks and some questions which were raised on the platform by some of the members. Thank you very much. You may flight those reports, and members, it was forwarded to all of us, and I hope we would have taken the time to read through it so that we can really go very quickly through these reports. there's quite a number of pages, so I'm going to be going through this very fast.
Chair, are we starting with the Gauteng report?
Yes, doesn't matter. Let's start with Gauteng. You're not able to flight it.
I thought I was hearing it. Okay. You see, I thought I was hearing it. Sorry.
It wasn't opening, or maybe you needed to click on it again.
Can you see it now? Because on my.
Yes, thank you. We can.
Perfect.
All right. Members, there is the report of the Portfolio Committee on Health. This was compiled by the members, the staff who were accompanying the members to the oversight in the different provinces. I think if you can scroll, so initially the purpose of the visit, we understand that this had to do with just stop right there. As a result of the riots and the unrest, and we wanted to ascertain for ourselves what the challenges were post the unrest period, and also to get an idea of the vaccination programs at various facilities. You would note that we had five members doing the oversight visit to Gauteng. Those are the two members from the parliament officials who accompanied the members. Hold on, it's Mr. Mori and Mr. Dodo. Or Dodo. And then the visit sites visitors were Ekurhuleni, Tembisa Hospital, Houghton Drive, Alexandra Community, CHC. You can continue. Those were just the staff members who interacted with the members. You can continue. I think these just simply explain what services they provide at Tembisa Hospital. And then the challenges are quite important that Dr. Mthunzi reported on the general challenges that the hospital faces on a daily basis. And here they spoke about the vaccination sites, the progress, the challenges, with regards to infrastructure, human resources, equipment, and these seem to be general challenges which are raised at all of the facilities. There are common challenges, and those are the common challenges. And then onto the vaccination site. They mentioned that the staff members were vaccinated under the Sisonke vaccination program. You may go faster, and then this is just the times of operation and challenges, just hold on right there. So again, also in terms of the vaccination drive, there's a challenge with staff shortages, increase in demand of vaccination in the catchment area, meaning we're beginning to see, and I see what the department calls a lack of arms for vaccination. Initially, there was a supply demand, a supply problem, and now we have a demand generation challenge in that we do not have enough people coming forward for the vaccinations, and this is what this speaks to. Please continue. Committee's observations, just hold on a bit. We need to just note that the committee raised the issue of lack of funding and essential resources, and how this hinders on the hospital's ability to perform optimally. Also mentioned the negative publicity which damages the image of the hospital and the community members. Continue. We commended them for taking the recommendations of the health ombuds forward. So if you had read through this, so generally this is what the committee is saying, how we've noted their concerns, but we also expressed our own concerns. Continue.
Honorable Chair?
Yes, Honorable Munyai?
This issue of the infrastructure, healthcare infrastructure to expand.
All right. You want me to go back a bit there? Please scroll back.
All I'm just saying that if those issues are covered, no problem.
Yes, I've mentioned that.
And the cleanliness of the hospital need to be improved, please.
All right. I think, Honorable Munya, you were particularly on this one. If there's anything, are those the only two you want to mention?
Yes, my Honorable Chair.
You're very welcome. All right. Please continue. So, members, you would have noted the challenges, and continue. If you want to engage, we can engage on the challenges which are experienced or any other matters pertaining to this report. And the rest are about the same, unless there are particular points you want to actually raise. Continue. They also noticed that the number, just hold on please, that at that point in time the vaccination for those between the ages of 18 and 34 were just opened, and that there was quite a big interest by the youth, and also in the numbers who attended the vaccination sites at that period in time. They continue. Right, just there. So always, if you can stop at the committee recommendations, it was concerned about the infrastructure of the center. There was the recommendation to repaint the vaccination area and ensure better hygiene. There was the recommendation by the committee that the resuscitation area should be more private to protect the dignity of patients. And there was a concern about the lack of choice that the community members were given regarding the vaccine they preferred. We do note that members are asked, of the community are asked which
All I'm saying, those ones that are there in Alexander, it is quite honest and truthful. But also on Tembisa, we recommend the reopening of the Kempton Park Hospital to easy pressure from Tembisa Hospital. And we further recommended that there should be also additional regional hospital, because we have noticed that Tembisa Hospital services the three metros, the metro of Johannesburg with the population of Deep Slot, city of Tswane, and also city of Ekurhuleni.
Thank you, Honorable Munyai. Please scroll. There was a meeting with the health MEC of Gauteng. Maybe even here, Honorable Munyai, since I was not present, would like to mention anything in particular.
All the concern, I'm sure Honorable Van Staden, Honorable Chirwa, and Honorable Gela and Dr. Harvard may have some addition. But I can say that all the concern that we have experienced, be it Alexander, be it all other areas we visited in Gauteng, we raised with the MEC, and she was advised that raising those issues within the institution is not personal. They must require practical and urgent intervention.
Thank you. Can you scroll, and I will give the members an opportunity, because we just need to first go through the document itself, and then if you think there are any additions or omissions, then we can just hold on there. So those are the concerns and recommendations which are made by the Portfolio Committee to the MEC, which the Honourable Bunuya Iyai was talking about. You can scroll, Honourable Members, please note so that you'll be able to engage with this. You can go, and I'm sure you would have read it. And that's the conclusion on the meeting with the MEC. The MEC was advised to provide a detailed report to the committee's concerns and recommendations. I will ask the secretary to inform us whether we had received such a report and that we should write to the MEC again to request this report if we had not received it, and on the various points which were raised by the committee. So, Honourable Members, you are very welcome. I heard the voice of Honourable von Staden somewhere in the background. You're all very welcome to engage with the report, and please inform us where you think corrections need to be made.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I may, under the conclusion, I think we must just put in there that Member Munya is very correct what they have said. But we have also asked the MEC on the Tembisa Hospital for a full report on the Tembisa Hospital from her side, as well as on the Kempton Park Hospital, on what the reasons were for the closure of the hospital, how many equipment is still in the hospital, and so forth, and so forth. So I think we might just put in by conclusion that we have asked this committee for a report from the MEC of Health of Gauteng, a report regarding Tembisa Hospital and Kempton Park Hospital. And then also, I just want to state, Chairperson, I've mentioned also in that meeting, and Munyai can confirm that, on the 23rd of August, that while we was visiting the MEC on the 11th of June regarding Charlotte Maseke and the Kopanong Hospital, I said in that meeting on the 23rd of August that we have not received that report. She said that she had sent it to Mr. Dodo, who was with us on the visit of the 23rd of August. But really, Chair, I still haven't received anything. If that report of Charlotte Maseke and Kopanong Hospital, which was promised to us on the 11th of June, or were sent to us indeed, must be just sent to us as members as well, please. But don't ask if we put in the conclusions. All what we need to put in the conclusions is the reports that we need from Tembisa Hospital and the Kempton Park Hospital. The other was just for information, but I said that we as members have still not received it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members?
I'm okay with what Honourable van Staden raised.
Yes, if our secretary and assistants would just note the points which were raised, and also the fact that I requested that they look specifically for these reports, and then if we had not received it, that we write a letter requesting these reports. Honourable Members, can we therefore adopt this report? I am looking for anyone to move for the adoption of this report. There weren't really amendments, no.
Chairperson?
Yes, Honourable Gela? Honourable Gela? Can anyone, Honourable Gela seems to have challenges with connectivity. Is there anyone who would consider to move for adoption of this report, please?
With amendments, Chair.
With amendments. Okay. And the amendments, we need to make certain that they will be captured. Yes. Thank you very much. Are you moving, Honourable van Staden?
I'm moving with amendments, yes, Chair. But
okay, can one of you speak?
Can we just hear what Member Munya is saying, and after that I will move with the amendments, please.
Okay, I support Honourable Member van Staden for having moved with the amendment, because there have to be that amendment. What Honourable van Staden said is a concrete request he formally made in that meeting.
Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson.
Yes.
Can you hear me, Chairperson?
I can hear you, Honourable Gela.
My apology, I'm having a network connection problem, but I think the report is a true reflection of our visit And I want to also second Honorable Nyai and Honorable Smith, but also just to check, have you received any report so far since our last visit? And also if the report can be forwarded to us as members. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members. So the report is duly adopted, moved for adoption by Honorable Van Staden and seconded by Honorable Munyai, and then with the strengthening of that request for the report to be found and to be forwarded to the members, and if not, if we don't have that, we will request it. Thank you very much. We will go to the report on the KZN oversight visit.
Can you see your chairperson?
Not yet.
Not
just
yet.
Click on there. Click on there.
Is it visible now?
Yes, it is. Thank you. This one, I was part of this oversight visit, so I'll be able to go through this a bit faster. So we had an oversight visit. You may continue the same purpose of the visit. It was as a result of the recent riots, and we wanted to hold on there, please. We wanted, hold on, just scroll back a little bit, and we needed to ascertain the extent of the damage and the challenges with regards to the unrest, and also to familiarize ourselves with the vaccine rollout in the province. We visited two districts, which was the Umgungundlovu district and the Etiquini district. We visited five facilities in total, of which one was a psychiatric facility or psychiatric hospital, which is the Ekuhlengeni psychiatric hospital in Etiquini, and also the Mahatma Gandhi Memorial Hospital, which serves both as a district and regional hospital. And in the Umgungundlovu district, we had visited three facilities, of which one was a regional hospital. All right, those were the staff members, and then the, we had an idea of the services which they provide. And then we will look at the challenges. Just go back a bit. I think this is the first CHC, am I right? Need to see your heading. Yes, the Imba Lenhle Community Health Center. Continue. We need to get to the challenges especially. You can scroll to where you were with challenges and recommendations. What we did note that this is a huge facility, a very clean facility. It seems to be very well managed. We were very impressed with the management of this facility. And the challenges were a shortage of storage areas at the CHC, a shortage of parking space. It's using a borrowed HST bus and gazebos as flu clinics. And they didn't have enough waiting areas, and also, of course, the shortage of staff members. You can control 12 staff members tested COVID positive, two in isolation, and seven are fully recovered. They mentioned specifically the challenge with anti-vaccines, fake news, and how it was affecting the rollout of the vaccine program. You can continue. Related to the unrest was the functionality of the facilities was compromised. The vaccination numbers dropped. Two vehicles of the facility were damaged, and that it was in the process of being repaired. Continue to committee observations. Committee was provided a short tour. We made the following general observations. Security at the entrance within the facility, sanitizer stations were present. COVID regulations were being observed. The designated registration site of flu clinics were working efficiently. We saw the tent as a measure of alleviation of the problems, a vaccination site with efficiently functioning vaccination stations, an observation area, and that, again, it's mentioned that the CHC was impeccably clean. Please scroll. At Grace Hospital, one of the oldest hospitals, which I still mentioned was one of the hospitals sought after for interns, don't go too fast. Yes, proper challenges which were used. Interns really wanted to rotate medical interns at this hospital. The vaccination site manager reported the following. 110 staff members tested positive for COVID-19 during the third wave. 80 have recovered, 30 were still in active isolation. And that healthcare worker vaccine, COVID-19 vaccine registration was being abused, and so it was discontinued. And then again, the challenge was fake news. And what is perpetuated by members of the public, and that's where I raise it, we also need to be mindful what we say, in that we need to really get our people to be vaccinated. It's the only way forward for us. So it comes up repetitively at all of the facilities. Continued staff shortages. They were doing well at 800 vaccines administered a day. We raised the point of the resuscitation area needed to be more private in case there needed to be an active resuscitation performed. And then there was a problem with vaccine shortages at that time because of the unrest. And continue. Is this the next? Yes. And now, the only hospital that we really had a challenge with was Northdale Hospital, where we realized that this hospital is in need of financial support and upgrading. It's an old building. It serves a very large community, diverse community, and that the hospital, that there was a plan approved for improvements to the hospital, and I think with new wards, for example, but that it has never been followed through up to now, and it's been a number of years, I think about 10 years. So if we can continue, and the challenges were the same of staff, high staff turnover, they cannot retain their staff, scroll back a bit. And no career passing, no rural and danger allowance at that particular hospital. I've mentioned the old building, the poor ventilation, and the spacing norms of COVID-19 wards were not met. Promises of developing and building new wards I've mentioned. So generally, this is the hospital that we noticed really needed attention, and we had discussed this with the MEC, and she had given us a commitment that they were going to look into supporting this hospital and taking these things, these proposals forward. You may continue. This is in the Etiquini district. This is the meeting with the MEC. Those are the officials who were present. We had a presentation by the MEC. They've mentioned the challenge of understaffing, result of the cost-cutting measures, which started even prior to COVID-19. And the biggest challenge is the lack of funding by the Department of Health. They have a lack of adequate infrastructure, again, the fake news and the unrest with regards to the unrest. It's created a backlog in the COVID-19 vaccination drive at that point in time, and that in terms of vandalized and damaged infrastructure at Ekurhuleni Hospital, the flu clinic tent at Cramond Clinic was burned, Newtown, ACHC and Aregwala district offices were also suffered, and then there was stolen and damaged equipment, especially at the psychiatric hospital, which we have seen for ourselves, and loss of important files and information, and limited staff reported to work at the health facilities and during the period of the unrest. High volumes of trauma patients at certain hospitals and CHCs, and threats to healthcare facilities include a lack of public transport, threats for the, to the staff, bulk oxygen supply was a challenge because Afrox could not release bulk trucks due to security risks. Us understanding that the ISNIF attack could cause huge explosions. There was a supply of linen problem, a mortuary problem. Postmortems had to be postponed at some facilities. And then ambulance and other state vehicles were burnt. Please continue. These are our concerns. We raised our concerns with the MSC, especially with regards to the Northdale hospitals and all of the points which were raised above, which I just alluded to. Please continue to the psychiatric hospital. We were quite impressed with the psychiatric hospital. They have 800 patients. And the challenge is that they feel that they cannot, at this point in time, those patients cannot be sent back home, for example, and many are without family members, etc. But that there was a break-in at the hospital, and people, it's almost like it was a targeted break-in and entry, and in particular equipment. And here we're talking about audiovisual equipment and electronic equipment was stolen. Continue. So in terms of the district itself, the following challenges: slow registration and vaccine uptake, vaccine hesitancy is a challenge. Competition for resources between the COVID-19 epidemic response and vaccination components of the program and limited financial resources, which results in the inability to appoint more staff members and crime and car hijackings threat to the program. This is with regards to the vaccine program. Continue. You can continue. Achievements, it has a vaccination site at that particular psychiatric hospital, which is well managed and separate from the patients who are housed at the facility. And we asked specifically about injuries to any of the staff or the patients. None were attacked or injured in that during the time of the unrest. Please continue. You can continue. I've raised this. And then Mahatma Gandhi Memorial Hospital was the last hospital that we attended. Continue. And they, as I said, serve as both a district / regional hospital where they provide services which are normally based at a regional hospital. Continue with medical wards, surgical wards, theaters. Continue. I think the only one they said they don't have is orthopedic services. Only department they do not have. And the current situation is that they had a challenge during the unrest with staff not being able to access their work place, and they asked us to, in particular, look at the building of more staff residences. The reason that this is a great contingency strategy to best deal with situations such as the unrest, and I reminded them of the time when I was working in hospital, how easy it was to access your work, being for us being able to live within the staff residences, and there does seem to be a challenge that this is not much the norm anymore. Continue. Recommendations. There's a need for better support for the management staff at the Northdale Hospital. These are all our recommendations in general. There needs to be investment in essential resources such as staff, medical equipment, infrastructure at hospitals. They must address the staff shortages and infrastructure maintenance issues, especially in terms of the nurses and doctors who are unemployed, that they need to be taken up into the system. And there needs to be a huge effort on mass media campaign to eliminate fake news and doubts within community members with regards to the vaccine uptake. We need a program to make use of radio broadcast, TV, local newspapers, and other instruments to educate communities. And I think this will take us later to the point of what the NDOH's drive will be with regards to community awareness programs continue. And that is the report. Any input, Honorables Munyai and Fatstaden were there with me.
I think the report is a true reflection, Chairperson. I would move that we adopt the report as is.
Thank you very much. Honorable Munyai, to second.
Comrade Chair, my apology, Chair. Can I second the approval of the report as tabled before us?
I guess you can second the report, yes. Honorable Gela, the acceptance of the report. Thank you very much. So, honorable members, we have now completed that part of our work in terms of our agenda. That is all we were going to discuss today. I've had
Chairperson,
yes, honorable Gela.
Can I make a request that we need also to go and do oversight in other provinces? I know that as a new portfolio chairperson will do that. Remember, previously when it was still Dr. Zomo as our chair, we said we are also going to Northwest and also in other parts of our country and in the Limpopo. If maybe we can also consider, if we can have a sense of vaccine rollout in all provinces, how far they are currently, and also just to motivate and also check the issue of communication. I know that even previously in our portfolio committee, just last week, where we got that report, Limpopo is doing very well in terms of that. But we need also a portfolio committee and go and check on our own. That would be my proposal, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Gela. We noted. So I'm going to mention a few things which were raised today. I think they're actually only the two, apart from the ones which were raised already with SAPRA, as work we need to do. But then I also need to speak upon two other points. The one is now what Honorable Gellert raised about oversight to other provinces. The second one is a proposal that we must meet with the Minister and the NDOH. We know that we have a two-weekly arrangement with them, and we will follow that up, and we will come back to you. The third item is on the minutes, which previous minutes, which we had decided not to then bring today because Ms. Majalamba is not well, and she needed to be present in that meeting as she had put those minutes together. And then the next one is on our program going forward. There is a tentative program, and that program is really already full because we must also be mindful that we are still busy with the oral representations on the NHI bill, which with the chairperson becoming the deputy minister, that it's been put on hold for a little while, and we need to get back to that program, also understanding that Parliament has now restarted, and we are also quite busy in that regard. Honorable Van Staden, do you want to say something now before I complete what I am about to say?
Chairperson, there's just one other outstanding matter that we have discussed on the meeting of the 4th of August, and the minutes was approved on the 18th of August. Can I bring it up now, or do you want to finish first?
No, bring it up now.
Okay. All right. Now, on the meeting on the 4th of August, there was, on the SIU report on digital vibes, there was three resolutions taken by this committee. I just want to remind you about the last one. I think we mustn't forget about this resolution, and that was that the chairperson at that time should also have write a letter to the speaker asking her to request the president to send the report to Parliament so that it can be shared with the committee, and the response from the speaker must also be shared with the committee. The responses will then guide the committee on when it can schedule a meeting with the SIU. Then they just there after the cabinet were reshuffled and the chairperson is were appointed as the deputy minister and so forth. So I just want to remind you, chairperson, that this matter must still need attention as approved on the minutes of the 4th of August 2021. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We will certainly, we're putting it down as some of our points we need to attend to. The very last point I want to raise is that we have a tentative report. I must still apply my mind to this program. And it is really already full, considering the fact that we do have plenaries and sittings in between, and that the times allocated, or the times when we are not having sittings, very few and far between, but we need to be able to address the other challenges. I'm not going to send this out yet until I'm hoping to really sit with us today and with the secretary, and I hope she'll be better by tomorrow so that we can finalize this program. But just to give you an indication that we have the quarterly reports by the Department of Health, which must be brought to us very soon, and tentatively the 8th of September was put down for it. Then a briefing by the Department of Health on those quarterly reports on the 15th of September. You can note the dates, but it might just change here and there very slightly. Then when there was a request by Dr. James of the World Health Organization to have a briefing with the Portfolio Committee, I do not know at this point in time exactly what it is all about. And then we have public hearings, NHI public hearings, 22nd, 29th of October, etc. Honourable members, I want to ask your indulgence, as the previous chairperson had done, for us to consider having a few hours on Tuesdays and on Fridays to do these NHI public hearings. Looking at the program that is before me now, we wouldn't have any other option but to try and continue with the work where it was left off. So I'm actually asking your support for that. Any comments? Honorable Van Staden?
Just a question. How many entities must still come and appear before us, which was registered on the list? I presume it's still a lot.
Yes, well, we're starting with the Auditor General, then we're going to the Financial and Fiscal Commission, then the Medical Research Council, the Office of Health Standard Compliance, the Compensation Commissioner, SAPRA again, the NHLS, the Council for Medical Schemes, and so it goes on. And then very importantly, so that we are not late again, is the consideration and adoption of the committee's budgetary review and recommendations report, the BRRR. So there is quite a lot of work ahead.
Yeah, still a lot of work to do. And it's what Member Gela was also saying, remember, we was also talking, I want to support her. We were discussing the matter around the other provinces, which we still also need to visit, so we must also work that into a program. So therefore, yeah, I would support your view. Well, you say on Thursday and Fridays, on an open 3%.
Tuesdays, bit of Tuesdays and a bit of Fridays, and we'll see how it doesn't interfere with the other work of the committee and the members of the committee.
As long as it's not on Mondays, on constituency days, but then I think we don't have a choice but to do it like that then.
Thank you, Honourable Van Staden.
Chairperson.
Honourable Gela.
Yes, I also want to support your proposal to say that let's proceed with the NHI public hearing Tuesday and Friday. I'm also supporting Honourable Phillips on that one. Let's move on. We still have a lot to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Gela. Any other members who want to raise anything on this point? Because that's a very last point. I appreciate you. We appreciate the committee. your support for this.
Can I make a suggestion, Chairperson?
Yes, Honorable Gonzalez.
Can the committee secretary just draw up a draft program with all these dates already in it, together with proposed dates for visit and so forth and so forth? And then at the next meeting, we can see for our own eyes how constrained the program will look for the next few months, and then we can take a final decision at that meeting, if it is fine with you.
Yes, it is fine. She's already drawn up, but as you know, I've only been in this position for 2 days, and I wanted to also apply my mind to these dates and to bring this request also to you today, so that we can also populate that. And now she's also not well. So as soon as she's able to, and I'm going to do this as speedily as possible, we'll discuss between the two of herself and myself, and we'll bring the full list to yourselves. Thank you. All right. Thank you very much.
Chairperson.
Honorable Gela.
Yes. I also want to wish Ms. Majalambe a speedy recovery. As you indicated, that she's not well.
Thank you. All right, honourable members, if there is nothing else, which I don't think there is, we're then about to close our meeting. Thank you very much for your attendance today. And the meeting is then adjourned.